penny for choking a guy to death on the subway. But instead, there's the actual folk hero energy is getting pulled away on the same exact same week that happened. And they're struggling now. They're struggling to figure out how to address this because it's all artificial. The idea that there's any sort of real popular energy on there is just that it's much more helpful when you can project it onto a big rich guy like Donald Trump.
Well,
than these freaks that are actually behind the scenes.
Exactly. And as did you see that J.D. Vance is bringing Daniel Penny as his special guest to the Army football game?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And they're desperate to make their version
can I make a point
of
about that.
Yes.
I don't think that there's anything heroic about, Daniel Penny.
I'm so moved by what you just said. J.D. Vance is bringing him to the Army-Navy game. I think it's the Army-Navy game. Some football game for some stunt because they're trying to will this guy who killed one of the poorest people in our society, an unhoused person, a homeless person, who was having such difficulty, he choked him out for over 5 minutes on a subway car in broad daylight and then got away with it. That's for right-wing populism and the branding they're trying to get behind, even though we all know how ridiculous it is. That's their version of what a populist hero is. A dead-eyed white guy with a military background who goes onto the subway and protects all of the other respectable people from the hordes of poors that may make them a little bit uncomfortable for a second. The populist hero for them isn't the guy who did kill a healthcare CEO who was indirectly responsible for the deaths of tens of thousands of other people in the so-called populist movement or whatever, both the right and the left. The point is just like it's a false premise. Their version of populism is that these vigilantes and right wing freaks that get to do whatever they want and crush the people that are below them, as opposed to when violence is directed towards the powerful, then the so-called politicians of the people, the populace, they shrink into a little corner and then they go, it's all an aesthetic. And if you fell for it, you're a mark.
And the point isn't who's a hero in this. The point is that in both of these stories, the number one villain, if you had to pick one person, is the healthcare CEO.
Yeah, exactly.
The one going to the deepest pit of hell is the healthcare CEO.
With that said, a word from one of our sponsors, Babbel. Have you ever thought about a gift for yourself this year, one that has the power to help you grow, learn, and get a better version of yourself in the next year? Give yourself the gift of language by getting Babbel. I am getting Babbel to learn a new language ahead of my travels for my honeymoon next year, and I'm very excited to get started. Babbel is the language learning app that gets you talking. Speak like a whole new you with a quick 10-minute lessons. Crafted by over 200 language experts, Babbel gets you talking with a new language in 3 weeks. And because talking is the key to really knowing a language, Babbel is designed for real conversation. Wasting hundreds on private tutors is the old way of learning how to speak a language. Babbel's tips and tools are inspired by the real-life stuff you actually need when talking. It has a focus on conversation, so you'll be ready to talk wherever and whenever you go. Want more proof that Babbel gets you talking? Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and other leading universities continue to prove Babbel works. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is the equivalent to a full semester in college. With over 16 million subscribers sold, Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee, so your gift to yourself or your loved ones is risk-free. This holiday season, give the gift of language with Babbel, and here is a special holiday deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/majority. That's 60% off, up to 60% off, at babbel.com/majority, spelled babbel.com/majority. Rules and restrictions may apply. A word from another one of our sponsors, and then we'll be speaking to Kyle Kulinski.
Hey, let's be honest. The thing that people really want for the holidays is to see their favorite people more often, right? They miss you. That's why this year, the best gift you can give, besides plane tickets or a helicopter or a teleporter, is an Aura digital picture frame. It is named the number one digital frame, photo frame by Wirecutter. Aura frames are incredibly smart. They are super easy to use. They allow you to upload unlimited photos and videos directly from your phone to the frame. It's super easy. Load the app up. It automatically takes it up there. Plus, here's the amazing thing. You can order the frame online. You preload it with photos and videos using the Aura app. So when your parents, your cousins, your uncles, your sister, your brother, your kids, whoever it is, when they take the frame out of the box, they put it in there. If your parents don't know their Wi-Fi, you can set that up too. And as soon as they plug it in, bing, there's your pictures. It's a great gift to give and so easy to use. You're going to make someone's day every day. And frankly, it's also pretty cool to have in your own house. So get more and get more than one. Buy them a gift, buy yourself a gift. And incidentally, you can control the different frames, where it goes. Mom's frame, our frame. Save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off of Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames by using the promo code MAJORITY at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code MAJORITY. This deal is exclusive to listeners, so get yours now in time for the holidays. Terms and conditions apply. Hey, folks, several years ago, I was starting to experience a little bit of thinning. I don't know why, but it's mostly like on this side of my head. I don't know if it's because I sleep on that or whatnot, but it was getting a little bit more aggressive. Now I'm getting up there with age and whatnot, and I was thinking like maybe I would start to look into taking something for that, but I didn't want to take any drugs for it. Nutrafol comes along, and Nutrafol has a great reputation. It is completely drug-free, and there are no side effects that deal with sexual issues. And so I started taking it, and the results have been great for me. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement brand. It is trusted by over 1 million people, like I say, including me. You will see thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. Now, thinning hair is different for men and women, so a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth doesn't cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas for men and for women that are tailored to different life stages, such as postpartum or menopause, and lifestyle factors, such as a plant-based lifestyle, so you can get just what you need. Also, you know, sometimes aging is a situation. But Em and I both know women who have had a lot of success with Nutrafol, specifically one of Emma's friends, me, a friend of a friend. It's actually a pretty good story, but for another time. Physician-formulated, 100% drug-free ingredients, like I say. Nutrafol supports healthy hair growth from within by targeting key root causes of thinning: stress, hormones, aging, nutrition, lifestyle, metabolism. It helps through whole-body health. And the thing about Nutrafol, while a lot of supplements just rely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests their final formulations. In a clinical study, 72% of men saw more scalp coverage after taking Nutrafol men hair growth supplements for 6 months. 86% of women saw improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol women hair growth supplement for 6 months. With the Nutrafol subscription, building a hair growth routine is simple. You purchase online, no prescription necessary. Automated deliveries, free shipping keep you on track. Plus, you can save up to 20%. You'll have access to free naturopathic doctor consults, and Headspace membership is included. Again, whole health helps your hair. The cold, dry air of winter can be unforgiving, but your hair doesn't have to suffer. For a limited time, Nutrafol offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping. When you go to Nutrafol.com, enter the promo code TMR. You can find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled N-U-T-R-A-F-O-L.com, promo code TMR. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code TMR. And now, back to the show.
It might take all the strength I got. Back. We are back, and I'm so excited to have on the show, long time coming, Kyle Kalinske of Secular Talk, Crystal, Kyle, and friends. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So, you know, your posting game has kind of been getting me through, I would say, these past few weeks, because this might be the funniest tweet I've seen in quite a while. Nancy Mace went to barbecue for her birthday, and how many different kinds of beans is this? Kyle tweeted, "That's a lot of beans, you nasty ass bitch." And like I saw another person saying, "Well, now we know why she's obsessed with bathrooms." So
that is so gross.
That's a. I mean, God, I don't want to be in a 6 foot radius of that lady right now. Holy moly!
Yeah, I told Crystal, I was like, man, because that was one of those tweets where I didn't think it just happened. Like, I saw it, and that was my instant reaction, and I just went with it. And yeah. Afterwards,
flow state tweet?
Flow state tweet. That's exactly right. Crystal was like, man, you had a real moment of brilliance there, didn't you?
It really, I mean, honestly, that is, if you have a tombstone, there you go. Oh. You can just have that tweet basically superimposed on it. Cause
it got big. People are making, like, graphics of me with, like, you know, how the motivational
I saw
quotes
that.
With that.
Yeah. But, I mean, Nancy Mace, truly, have you ever seen a thirstier politician in your life for attention?
Oh, my
I mean,
God. It's so wild.
You read that story about how one of her staffers said she tried to get punched in the face on January 6th by of the people. So, for attention.
Right. Right. And now she's saying, oh, my, you know, oh, I was assaulted by some pro-trans person. And there's, like, three or four witnesses that was like, you got a handshake. What are you talking about?
Well, she thinks that just the mere presence of a trans woman in the bathroom means she's likely to be sexually assaulted, which, I don't know, perhaps a handshake for her is like what an assault would be for somebody else. But I don't know, like, what do you think? I guess Nancy Mace is such a clown, but she is kind of representative of MAGA right now. Like, it just headlines, substanceless, attention over everything else. And hoping that pays dividends for you in some way. And frankly, it's kind of working out for them. Although I will say that Trumpism without Trump, I do think is going to be a failure given his kind of unique charisma and hold over the MAGA cult. But this is a bit of a rambling question. I guess what's your sense of how MAGA is positioned right now?
Well, I mean, how would you distract from the fact that we now have the billionaires completely and utterly taking over our government? That Trump has appointed countless billionaires, countless Wall Street executives. Doge is like this big thing now that even Democrats are like, I agree with them on this point and this point. And it's like, this is the distraction. The distraction is I'm going to talk about trans people 24/7 and pretend like trans people are hurting you and screwing you and ruining your life. And just focus on this and don't look over here as we run out the back door with all the money. It's literally the oldest trick in the book. It's divide and conquer. And trans people are now a scapegoat in the same way that back in the day, it was gay people. You know, there people forget there was a time not that long ago where the overwhelming majority of the country was against gay marriage, right? I believe it was in 2004, the Republicans ran on this idea of getting a constitutional amendment to define marriage as between man and a woman. And by the way, that was happening when? As the Iraq War was happening. So it's another divide and conquer. Hey, look over here, don't look over here. And the bottom line is, I'm now of the belief that you got to fight on both fronts. You got to fight. You got to put the focus where it should be, which is, hey, the billionaires are taking over the government. But also you have to defend these marginalized communities who are being scapegoated. They didn't do anything wrong. Who have trans people hurt? No, they're not hurting anybody.
Yeah, I'm totally in agreement with you on that front. And I guess we thought that you and I both thought Kamala Harris is going to win this election.
I
was pretty bullish on my electoral map. I know you were as well, but that was part of it was what you talk about here, which is that broadly on the issues, we saw in 2022 how the Republicans ran on anti-trans stuff, and it didn't work out for them. But in 2024, with Donald Trump being at the top of the ticket and the force of his personality, the fact that he is a charismatic figure, and the fact that he's anti-establishment and hated by both Democrats and Republicans, I think really benefited him. And people are just taking the wrong lessons about, oh, it's time to throw trans people under the bus. No, Yeah, Sted Herndon made this point to us when he came on our show. The part of the problem was that the Democrats didn't have a primary where they could have hashed these issues out and performed democracy for the public. It was really difficult for them to sell the notion that they were the protectors of democracy when a majority of Americans thought Biden was too old to run again. And he did so anyway. There wasn't really a period of time where the Democrats could have had a debate about these issues, which would have been the publicity that they needed for, so people even knew where they stood. And it was an example for folks to be like, okay, they're not responsive to what we're saying. Overall, we don't want this guy to run again. We don't think he can do the job. So I don't know, might as well be entertained as our government doesn't respond to us at all.
Yeah, what I would say is Trump proved that you could be the most divisive person in the entire country and win. He was just divisive along the incorrect lines. He told people, all of your problems are real, they're legitimate, you're angry, but the problem is the immigrants. The problem, it's the trans people. And he hammered that away over and over and over, and that was his narrative. And people are angry, they're pissed off, and they don't really know where to point their anger, right? And the problem with the Democrats, it was they didn't have a counter-narrative to take on that narrative. The counter-narrative has to be, they're wrong. Immigrants are not the problem. Trans people are not the problem. The problem, it's Elon Musk. It's the robber barons. It's the billionaires. It's the corporations who've bought our government, rigged our government to represent them, and never represent you. And so the fact that the Democrats were more technocratic and they're more status quo managers who call for decent policies, but it's like little tweaks around the edges, that just left the lane wide open for a demagogue like Trump to win. And he ended up winning by talking about Arnold Palmer's cock. He ended up winning by saying immigrants are eating cats and they're eating dogs. Like, for people to take away, oh, I think we should cave to the right on certain issues and maybe be more kind to the right on many issues. My takeaway is the exact opposite. You can be as unhinged, as arrogant, as divisive as you want to be, as long as you keep coming home to your narrative of the problem is the billionaires. The problems, it's the donor class. That's what we need to do.
I mean, the idea that you would be taking anything of substance out of this election in terms of like what Donald Trump ran on specifically is an entire misreading of the political moment. Because as you say, he part of what gave me confidence, and maybe you as well, was the idea that his campaign was so undisciplined from a message perspective. And you had the through line of they're coming after me, they're trying to shoot me, and also immigrants are horrible, and Kamala Harris is a bitch that should get punched in the face. And those were the kinds of things where it's like, okay, I just don't necessarily see what I saw in 2016, where he at the very least was talking about how Bernie Sanders was right to call Hillary Clinton corrupt and co-opting that messaging, or the free trade, anti-free trade posture. He was at the very least speaking to that anger. And this time around, he was entirely incoherent, which is an even greater indictment on the Democratic Party branding. Not really for me, any specific candidate, but it's like, give people an enemy. They're angry. And the enemy is who you say. It's the wealthy. It's the elites who are, and we can talk about the Luigi Mangione shooting in a bit, but alleged. But that is like, that's that anger that they just completely didn't tap into. And it's clearly there. They should have.
Yeah. And none of them are coming to the correct lessons now, because you don't see this like massive uptick in anger and narrative driving. If anything, you see what we discussed before, which is like, oh, I don't know, maybe on immigrants we cave a little bit more, even though Kamala ran on a super strict border bill and said Trump is the one who tanked it. It's just, if anything, this election shattered everything about the way I understand politics, in the sense that the main takeaway is, as long as you're angry and you have a narrative, you can get away with almost anything at all. And that's what Trump did. And it's kind of sad how easy it is to convince people, no, seriously, the source of your problem, it's the immigrants. Like, oh, your wages are low and you don't have good health care and this and that. Well, you know, maybe if we deport 20 million people, that'll be better off for you. I mean, that's functionally the argument of the right. And I'm now of the belief, don't give even an inch on that argument. Not an inch. You got to fight back on all fronts and make clear these are not the enemies.
Yeah, the Democrats have unfortunately not been doing that, though, because the only way that they hit the Republicans in that election was on hypocrisy, was on process, as opposed to the substance of the immigration point. It was like, Donald Trump, he doesn't care about you. He wanted to kill this right-wing border bill that reinforces the Republican Party's framing on the issue of immigration. And what do you know? It was the same. In many ways, it does shatter our perception, but it's also the same story that we've been telling, I would say, since 2016, which is that if you try to be Republican light, people go with the real thing basically every time, unless there's a global pandemic or, you know, we're in the at the end of a really unpopular Iraq war and the economy is crashing.
Yeah. And if you think back to Bernie, he was able to spark a movement because he had a narrative. And even though he was like 1,000 years old and he's kind of like a humorless old guy, I mean, and I love Bernie, I mean that with love, but like just the fact that he had a narrative and he kept hammering away on it, he was able to go from like 2% in the polls to 48% in the polls in 2016. And it's like, wow. Now imagine if you have somebody with that narrative and with that anger, but you also sprinkle in the entertainment value and the humor. I mean, it's honestly, it should be easy to defeat these charlatans, but this is now he's 2 for 3 in elections, and that requires some soul searching.
The Democrats ceding the ground to him on this allowed him to paint immigration as a pro-worker narrative, which you're
fighting on his grounds.
He
framed the conversation, and you followed him down that path, as opposed to saying, no, I reject your framing. Here's the reality. Why did you put so many Wall Street people in your administration last time and so many billionaires? Why are you doing it again this time? Like, why is your number one legislative accomplishment a massive tax cut for the rich where 83% of the benefits went to them? You're not pro-worker. We lost 200,000 jobs. What are you talking about? You have to totally reframe the conversation. And there's very few leaders who are willing and able to do that and know how to do that.
And Trump firing Lina Khan and basically replacing her with Andrew Ferguson, who, can we pull up this document that Punchbowl News obtained? We read this on the show the other day. I'm sure you've seen this, Kyle, where basically it shows how Andrew Ferguson, Trump's pick for the FTC, who previously worked as chief counsel to Mitch McConnell, by the way, says that, oh, yeah, we're going to go against the reverse Lina Khan's anti-business agenda, you can see there. And a lot of this is about wokeness and the radical left and DEI and all of that. But turns out, what do you know? J.D. Vance's lip service about loving Lina Khan was a lie, just like his lip service about loving the child tax credit, a vote that he never showed up for, was a lie. Like, they were grifting, and you know what? They're not being held accountable for it because in many ways, Trump doesn't have a full constituency outside of his cult. Like, he can almost do anything and get away with it. Yep. And that is an indictment on the opposition and their tactics.
Didn't J.D. Vance get like a 10% or a 0% on his AFL-CIO scorecard?
Pretty sure.
They say, oh, yeah, he's a populist. But then you do a little bit of research and you're like, hold on. He said he was for the extended child tax credit. And he literally didn't even show up to vote for it when he could have. What are you talking about? You dig deeper in his record. Oh, turns out he's not for the PRO Act. Well, that's like the key dividing line of whether or not you're a populist, whether or not you're for the working class. And so Trump, same thing. You know, I keep bringing this up, but he outsourced 200,000 jobs when he was president after he ran as the anti-outsourcing guy. There is no substance to the idea that these people are populist or they're pro-worker or they're anti-establishment. And to your point, Lina Khan was like the main one here where it was like, look, if he fires Lina Khan, okay, he was completely and utterly full of shit. And I don't know about you, but I haven't seen much of a MAGA backlash over Lina Khan being fired. I've seen absolute crickets. It's almost like they follow the cult leader wherever the cult leader wants to go. And they're not actually populist. They're not actually anti-establishment. They're not actually pro-worker.
That's why the idea that we can unite with the quote populist right, you would have to fight for the right things. That would require the populist right giving a crap about about these kinds of things, right? Where, as you say, I just don't necessarily think that constituency exists. They're just MAGA, and there's no backlash on the substance. It's just that they love when Trump triggers the libs. The only thing that I can think of where they had a splinter was on the vaccines. And even though Trump did did the Operation Warp Speed, they still don't hold him accountable for it. He's the anti-vax guy that created all these mRNA vaccines that are, I don't know, giving you all these health problems, apparently, they say.
Yeah, look, it's very simple. They don't mean it. They don't believe it. All of its posturing, all of its virtue signaling. Because they've had countless instances where they could have stood up and said, sir, I disagree with this. And they haven't done it. And so, you know, in 2016, I could understand the argument and perhaps I was more sympathetic to the argument of like, look, he did say some anti-outsourcing stuff. Maybe he means it. Maybe it makes sense. Maybe there are minor areas where you could work with them or whatever. But it's no longer 2016. We already have Trump's first whole time in office to see how he's going to act. The best predictor of future action is past action. And across the board, he was a total con artist. Like, he was George W. Bush on steroids. And so to think now that's going to be different, based on what? Based on what? How would that be? He snuggled up to Elon Musk at the hip as Elon Musk is waging war against the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and the NLRB. Like, this is their agenda.
It's because people are tired of it. It's because it's branding. I really do think that. I think that in also, like, what Morning Joe did, going and kissing the ring. Yep. Like, they're like, one, they're worried about their access. But I think even more broadly, what has been disconcerting is the despondency that I'm seeing in reaction from a lot of people, where it's just like, maybe we need to take our medicine and accept this. And it's like, no, this is the opposite. This is when we should all be resisting and coming together. And I'm not seeing as much of that as I did, as was the case when he first got elected. But that also wasn't a strategic resistance in many ways. Like, a lot of that was focused on Putin and stuff that ended up being pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. So MSNBC's ratings have basically tanked 50%. And there's a lot of MSNBC refugees. And guess what? They are fleeing to spaces like ours. We now have the MSNBC refugees, because now I look at the situation and I go, you need to quadruple the resistance from the last time. The idea that now we're supposed to take this guy seriously because we won the election. Guess what? Because he won the election. Guess what? He was still talking about Arnold Palmer's cock the whole time. He's still going to outsource more jobs. He's still going to do more war. Like, let's not pretend like this is anything different than what we know it is now.
And you brought up the war piece. Wall Street Journal reported this last night that he is weighing whether or not his administration should do airstrikes on Iran's nuclear facilities, which is what Israel wants him to do. I'm reminded of Maureen Dowd's 2016 opinion piece in the New York Times called Donald the Dove, Hillary the Hawk. And to be fair, she got that second half correct. Definitely not the first part. If you could just talk, you've been on this for a while, the myth of Donald Trump as the anti-war candidate.
Well, first of all, he actually said this same thing on the campaign trail, and nobody talked about it. And it drove me crazy. He was having some interview, and he was like, yeah, I think Israel should attack Iran's nuclear sites. Like, what? He said it. This should have been the biggest story in the country. And I saw hardly any conversation around it. So basically, this is Trump saying, yeah, the thing I said before, I believe it now also. Just the other part of it is, how do people think this is going to unfold? If Israel attacks Iran's nuclear facilities, then Iran, of course, is going to fight back. And then of course, we're going to see this movement. Hey, we need to back our ally Israel as they defend themselves against Iranian aggression. This is how it's going to be framed. And Trump, we know he took $100 million from Miriam Adelson, and there was a quid pro quo there, like, you have to let us totally annex the West Bank. But the other part of that is, yeah, they want us to fight Israel's wars. That's what they want. And the thing that drives me crazy is, anybody who actually cares and goes beyond just vibes, if you wanted to look into what is Trump's foreign policy, it's all out there right in front of us. When he was in office last time, he signed a pro-torture executive order. He pardoned Blackwater war criminals who partook in that Nisour Square massacre when they gunned down innocent civilians.
Which Hegseth lobbied for, by the way.
Correct. Hegseth was the reason that they got that pardon. And Trump was like, sure, I'll go right along with it. Trump's first military raid as president killed a young American girl. His very first foreign policy decision killed a young American girl. He hired John Bolton and Mike Pompeo and Gina Haspel, all these insane neocon warmongers. He dropped the mother of all bombs on Afghanistan. Now he's talking about war with Mexico. And the reporting is that right now they're discussing how far exactly should we go? How big should the war be? Should we just do drone strikes and some maybe targeted airstrikes? Or Should we put some boots on the ground and go in there that way? These are the conversations that they're having. So the notion that this guy, that in any world he would be anti-war, it's an absolute joke. It's a catastrophic joke. And, you know, from these same people, I find that they never call a spade in the other direction, too. Like, I remember when Biden actually pulled out of Afghanistan, nobody was defending him. I was like, hold on. There was like 70 of you just last week were saying this is one of the top issues is getting out of Afghanistan. Then Biden does it. And all of a sudden it's like, well, we're not even going to mention. I remember Tulsi Gabbard. She put that as like central to her personality. And then Biden pulls out and she didn't say a goddamn word about it. And it's like, they're all fraudulent. They're all hacks. I can't stand them. And it's time for people to wake up and realize that exactly how he was last time, it's going to be like that this time, except probably worse, because now he has that added element of authoritarianism that he can get away with. There are no guardrails anymore where you have the Mark Milleys or other people saying, sir, I'm sorry, you can't shoot protesters in the leg. We don't do that here. Sir, I'm sorry, you can't invoke the Insurrection Act. That's a bad idea. Now it's loyalist sycophants all around him and a Supreme Court that said, you have complete and utter immunity for anything that's even remotely official.
Right. Which is, by the way, and I'm reading a book right now called Homeland by Richard Beck. And it's about how how the war on terror and the Bush administration really led us to the moment that we're in, including the Trump administration, because that is really the apex of what the Bush administration was trying to do with the executive. What was the executive theory? Unitary executive theory, essentially, right? Which is just like, if the president does it, it means it's a legal action and there shouldn't be guardrails. Like, isn't that the final form of what they were trying to do under Bush with Cheney?
Yes, that's exactly right. And this is, you know, this is like part and parcel of the idea of Project 2025. The whole idea is we want unitary executive theory of power. We want Trump to be basically an emperor. And then we want all little loyalist sycophants around him. We want to absolutely destroy the parts of the government that are actually good, things like the Department of Education or the NLRB or the CFPB. And they want to handcuff the regulatory state so there is no regulatory state. Let big business get away with whatever the hell they want to get away with. And then let the robber barons loot the treasury. Let Elon Musk loot the treasury. Let Vivek Ramaswamy loot the treasury. Give away the, you know, I'm sure you saw the article. What is it now? Jeff Bezos or Mark Zuckerberg, like all these people are now
going down
to Mar-a-Lago, kissing the ring and giving Trump $1 million checks for his inauguration. Well, what do you guys think this is? This is obvious quid pro quo, complete bribery and corruption. Now we have, they're opening up the door to keep the corporate welfare coming, the subsidies coming, the tax cuts coming, the government contracts coming. And all the while, what are they going to do? Turn around and cut grandma's Social Security check and cut Medicare and cut Medicaid to give the oligarchs and the robber barons even more money. It's really disgusting.
It really is. And in terms of the anti-war stuff, it's not discussed enough how Donald Trump's foreign policy led us to the current chaos that we're in. And this is not to absolve Biden of his complete complicity in genocide, but more so than complicity. Lock him up.
I agree.
I mean, right. Like, we're consistent on this front. Biden is a war criminal. There should be an ICC warrant out for him. If we were to actually apply international law in any real way, we have seen over the past year and a half how obviously insincere that idea is. But like, the Abraham Accords started as a Trump policy. Biden continued it. But he also did more drone strikes than Obama did in two terms and removed the reporting requirements for that. The Abraham Accords of trying to normalize with Saudi Arabia and other Arab nations while not dealing with the Palestinian people whatsoever created a sense of desperation for Hamas, where then Biden's in office. Okay, they thought potentially maybe there could be a shift in policy. No, there isn't. He's continuing the same policy of let's not deal with the Palestinian issue. We can keep 3 million Palestinians in a ghetto, 2 million in an open air prison, and then bomb the hell out of them on occasion to mow the lawn. And it'll be fine because U.S. influence in the region is paramount. That's what the message was said to Hamas. And Trump started that. Trump began that process to where we are, where now he's going to come into office and likely just allow Israel to ethnically cleanse the entire West Bank because, as you mentioned, Miriam Adelson gave him 100 mil.
Yeah, and also another thing nobody talks about is Trump ripped up the Iran agreement. This agreement was working. There were over a dozen times the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, went into Iran and they looked at their facilities and they said they're abiding by the rules and the regulations. They are not enriching to the point of getting a nuclear weapon. They're using this power for their power grid and for scientific research as they're allowed to do. And in return for that, all we did was ease sanctions on them and give them back their own money that we stole. Everything was working. Everything was hunky-dory. He comes in and rips it up. And then I always love when they're like, Iran is even closer to a nuclear weapon now. My goodness. And they're like, oh, man, we got to crack down even harder. Right. We got to do more sanctions. And it's like, you do realize that you're the reason we are where we are. If you just kept that deal in place and abided by it, then there would be no problem at all.
Because and that's now, not their intention, right, Kyle, though? It's to create a pretext for war, right?
That's exactly so right. Because they're
insincere.
They want it. They keep pretending like it's somehow defensive, right? No, this is aggressive. This is offensive. We've all seen that clip of General Wesley Clark saying, hey, here are the countries that the U.S. wants to overthrow. And oh, would you look at that? Libya was on the list. Syria was on the list. Iraq was on the list. Those are all gone now. And now we have, of course, Iran, which is up next.
Right. Let's play the short clip that Matt has up here.
It's a RFK and a Dave Smith who helped commodify the libertarian movement to sell it to MAGA. Here he is asking the RFK a relevant question. And this is the Maverick RFK giving you his straight answer, unafraid to speak the truth.
Do you have concerns about the level of Israeli influence in our politics here in the United States of America?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a politician in political office, so I don't see much of that.
Do you?
That was a Mitch McConnell pause.
Yeah, right. I thought the video froze for a second. Turns out not as interested in Big Pharma. He'll talk until the cows come home about their influence on our politics. But Israel...
But he doesn't want to nationalize.
Yeah, right.
Right. Right. No, instead, apparently one of his top legal advisors has advocated for the federal government to remove the polio approval, which we basically people. Do you know what it was like before the polio vaccine? Children were dying all the time.
Yep.
Children were dying. People were getting paralyzed. If they survived, they were paralyzed. There was a president, a very famous president who was afflicted with that condition as a child, FDR. It's insanity.
By the way, I don't know about you guys, but I'm convinced they got dirt on him. The Israelis have dirt.
Of course.
On RFK. There's no doubt about it. There was a lot of speculation from pretty credible sources that perhaps Jeffrey Epstein was linked to Mossad.
Yes.
Right? So,
well, we've said that on the show because Ghislaine Maxwell's dad was very obviously a part of Mossad. Like, I don't even think that's controversial to say. He had deep links with Israeli intelligence. And wasn't Menachem Begin on Epstein's plane?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what did he say? He said something like, I got so many skeletons in my closet that if they could vote, I'd win in a landslide. That's what RFK said. And it's like, geez, man, what are those skeletons? Remember when he was on Andrew Schultz's podcast and he was like, yeah, look, I mean, I hung out with everybody where I was living. We hung out with Bill Cosby and Harvey Weinstein and Jeffrey Epstein. He goes down the list of like all the words. I'm surprised he didn't say Diddy on that list, too. Maybe he did hang out with Diddy also. But like, yeah, I really think they have dirt on this man because it's so, I mean, you know, he's just not anti-war, too. That's the other point to make, right? Him and Tulsi, they virtue signal like they're anti-war. And they support the complete and utter obliteration and annihilation and slaughter of innocent Palestinian civilians and wiping Gaza off the map right in front of our faces. There's no world where you can say you're anti-war and you got the pom-poms and you're cheerleading this on. I mean, the guy's a total fraud. I don't even agree with people who think like, on health issues, I think he makes some points. And even Bernie said this, bless his heart, because he talks about the ultra-processed foods and all those issues. But again, the problem is RFK believes in junk science. He believes in alternative medicine. If he's right about anything, it is totally ancillary to his main project. And his main project is honestly, alternative medicine kookery. There's a reason why alternative medicine is called alternative medicine, because it didn't make the cut to be actual medicine. So these are the types of people who sell snake oil and all sorts of stuff that doesn't work. Just like Kash Patel, he was hawking some pill which like reverses the vaccine. Or something he said. It's like, how are you guys so skeptical of every medicine that comes on the market, no matter how many double-blind, placebo-controlled studies are, that doesn't work, they're poisoning us. But then you turn around and some freak blogger in the Midwest, you know, writes some preposterous thing about how pineapple shavings cure HIV, and you're like, we found the cure for HIV.
Well, first of all, I want to correct myself. It was Ehud Barak, not Begin. So on the plane, still an Israeli prime minister. Like, but I think that's the problem where now we can kind of tie it into the healthcare CEO killing. When the Democrats leave a vacuum on the issue of healthcare, it is filled by cranks and charlatans, as you say, who try to make your healthcare about your individual consumption choices. Right. When there's no concept of public health until you turn 65 and you get Medicare, what does your health become? It becomes individual choices. And we've now, with our corroded media environment and this online thing where it's difficult for people to determine, frankly, what's true and what's not, like, we have exacerbated that issue of when your individual healthcare choices are the totality of, like, your the way that we're talking about healthcare, it creates an opportunity for people who are going to rip people off with these kooky treatments. Yeah. And I think it's also when the health insurers and the healthcare system is so mistrusted, rightly so, and exploitative, an alternative that you can buy on the internet or you hear a guy on Joe Rogan talking about it, that is more appealing to people because there's no concept of public health, which was also eroded in the pandemic.
That's right. That's right. I mean, these people have gone from being anti-big pharma to just anti-modern medicine. And the problem with big pharma, plain and simple, is capitalism. It's the profit motive. It's the price gouging. That's the problem. Guess what? The antibiotics work. The vaccines work. The medicine works, but they're charging you an arm and a leg for it. So the answer is to nationalize it, get the profit motive out of it. By the same token, what you're talking about for the health insurance industry, same thing. The answer is to give us single-payer Medicare for all. Get the profit motive out of it. I mean, these people, it is a parasitic mafia middleman that exists for absolutely no reason whatsoever. You got 18% administrative costs. Meanwhile, with Medicare, it's 2% administrative costs. That's why there's been a million studies that are like, hey, Medicare for all saves us $450 billion a year and saves 68,000 lives every single year. Because then we wouldn't have anybody who doesn't have access to basic health care under a Medicare for all system. So people are really missing the forest for the trees here to act like, you know, just the beating up on big pharma. It's like, yeah, we all agree big pharma is bad, but the answer is to nationalize it. That's the answer. The answer has nothing to do with pull 78,000 drugs off the market and lie about them relentlessly. Like, this is the problem. They're not just anti-big pharma. They're anti-modern medicine. And it is quite interesting, isn't it, that a lot of these people who go down that rabbit hole, they never end up talking about Medicare for all. They never end up talking about nationalizing big pharma. So, like, you're missing the obvious solutions. These things are not difficult to determine. They do a study, like, every other year with the Commonwealth Fund. Look at all these developed countries and what their health insurance system is like and healthcare system. And every year we rank, like, at the dead bottom. We're 11th out of 11. We spend more than anybody else. We cover fewer people. We have worse health outcomes. People die much younger. Like, this stuff is not rocket science, but there's this massive propaganda effort, and this gets to the mainstream media, massive propaganda effort to make you believe, oh, that's just a bunch of noise and we actually have the best healthcare system in the world, which is something people a lot of people casually believe. But I would recommend to everybody, and I said this a couple times on my show, go watch the Michael Moore documentary, Sicko. I don't care what your thoughts are on Michael Moore. Put it aside. Take my word for it. Just go take a look. And even if you're somebody who's like a wishy-washy centrist or whatever, I guarantee you, you come out of watching that documentary a changed person. And I would say the same thing for the documentary Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers.
Right.
You will go from a wishy-washy centrist to Viva la Revolution, because it's facts. They're spitting facts in those documentaries, and the answers are actually relatively simple.
When did Sicko come out, by the way?
2007, and they released it, I think, online for free, if my memory is right. I remember that moment.
So the point there is, 2007, Obama, he ran on healthcare, and then obviously the Affordable Care Act and Patient Protection Act came out of that, but there was no public option, a bunch of, you know, we could go through and litigate that, but like
it was a giveaway to private health insurance.
Yes.
It was Romney Care, and it was sold to a bunch of people like us, like, hey, this is a stepping stone to a public option or something like that in the future. And I think that was a lie, because all these companies, their profit and their power are way inflated compared to what they were 2013.
And when you see now how we've gotten to this point, right? And I think the pandemic did play into this, this erosion of this concept of public health and the government being able to provide health care. It's almost as if, because also the Democrats and I think Obama and his influence was a big part of this, treated healthcare as solved. It allowed a nihilist like Donald Trump or somebody who just he's going to entertain them while the government doesn't deliver for them. It makes him more potent because you have the Democrats being like, it's finished. We've got it. We'll strengthen the ACA. And all the while, I know that the patient protection part prevented the health insurers from denying people based on pre-existing conditions, which was a real benefit. And millions more people got insured. But they're still finding ways to deny you care. And people go, I'm paying $1,200 a month for this crap. I'm paying $2,000 a month for my family with this insurance. And then they're going to tell me they're not going to cover this? They're going to tell me, like, I can't get anesthesia for this surgery because of this? What is this? And I think that that fundamental lack of trust in our society is really, and immiseration of people materially, is so fundamental to Trump's rise and the fact that he was able to win talking about Arnold Palmer's cock once again.
Yeah, and it's particularly sad, right? Because you're 100% right. That's the core of the problem for sure. And under Trump the last time, 3 million people lost their health insurance, right? So, like, just objective failure. And under Democrats, to be fair, 50 million gained health insurance, which is good. And there are provisions of Obamacare we can point to, staying on your parents' insurance till you're 26, protecting pre-existing conditions, mandating 85% of the money actually goes to health care and not to bullshit. Like, all that stuff is good. But to your main point here, it's not enough. It's not enough. They're still price gouging people. People still, you know, are getting denied claims left and right. And that's why you saw the reaction you saw after Luigi Mangione murked a health insurance CEO. That's why you saw people you would not expect. Wine moms on Facebook who lean pro-MAGA are out there like, you know what? At least it wasn't a fucking normal person. Like, that's what these people are saying.
Right.
And, you know, it's time to do a little bit of introspection and try to, wow. But I don't see that in mainstream media. In fact, New York Times, I believe today, just dropped an opinion piece by a different health insurance CEO. I think it was actually a different United CEO wrote a piece, and it was like, they're right. We should fix the healthcare system. And it's like, you're the last person we need to hear from right now, bro. That's like Dick Cheney writing an article about not shooting people in the face.
Yeah,
it's right. Ridiculous. Why would we hear from you? You're a parasite. You're a mafia middleman. People hate you for a goddamn reason.
Right, right. And I thought you were going to mention the Bret Stephens op-ed, which was in and of itself ridiculous, saying that he was the true man of the people, the healthcare CEO.
But this
was
the one.
This is the one you're referring to. The healthcare system is flawed. Let's fix it.
Fuck off. We don't want you in the conversation. We don't want you in the conversation. You don't deserve to be in the conversation. That's like saying, hey, we're trying to get rid of slavery. Let's invite a plantation owner to write an article about how slavery might be bad.
Yeah, right. it's like a tick saying, hey, the Lyme disease situation is out of control. Let's solve it. Like...
Yeah, maybe you're not the best messenger for this. Lastly, Kyle, I don't want to keep you too long, but you've been pretty vocal about how you feel Joe Rogan has contributed to a lot of, I would say, the misinformation surrounding Donald Trump, and as just kind of sold out for, like, what was it, a $200 million contract with Spotify or whatever it is. I would argue that's corporate media, by the way. If you're getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars for a corporation, it's difficult to call yourself independent at a certain point. Like,
if you're selling steak to investors.
Yeah, right. Like, what is your view of the place that we're at? And part of why I wanted to have you on is just like, you're resisting Trump. We are. A lot of other lefty media is doing that too. But I do think, like, there's been capture of the independent space in a way that was not the same when you and I probably both, you before me, but started doing this kind of thing. Rogan is a great example of it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I call these people now fake independent media, because that's exactly what they are. They're fake independent media. They're not real independent media. You have people like Tim Pool. You have people like Dave Rubin. You know, I'm sure you saw all that Tenet Media stuff where Lauren Chen had this Tenet Media company, and she took money directly from the Russian government, but she ended up giving some of that money to Dave Rubin and giving some of that money to Tim Pool. And Dave Rubin and Tim Pool, I love this. Their dodge is, look, we had no idea that was coming from the Russian government. We just thought some shady billionaire gave a bunch of money to Tenet Media, and then Tenet Media gave it to us. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of the problem, isn't it? I've been doing this full time since 2012. I've never once had a conversation with a billionaire. I've never once had a conversation with an advertiser. The way that we raise money for our show is Patreon, you know, donations that happen monthly, and Substack for Crystal Kyle and Friends. We do it on Substack. And then outside of that, I just have what I call the default ads on YouTube, where there's this giant buffer and, you know, I have no idea what's coming in, what's going out, et cetera. That I think is a model that is defensible, because I've tried to insulate myself from any malincentives. But if you call yourself independent media and you have a $100 million, $200 million contract from Spotify, or you're taking money from shady billionaires left and right, or you're going to companies that contradict your values, your open express values, I'm sorry, that is no longer, you're not just independent media because you happen to be on the internet. Yeah. If you have the exact same incentive problems as the people in mainstream media, then you're fake independent media. You're not real independent media. And I'm now going to war, because what we saw is a lot of these people, like Joe Rogan, you know, I was there. I was on his show 4 or 5 times. He would sit there and nod in agreement when I would make anti-Trump arguments and arguments in favor of a left-wing worldview. Then 3 weeks later, Ben Shapiro would come on and say the exact opposite of me on every issue, and he would nod along in agreement, right? And so at some point, you got to call spade a spade. You're not independent media, and you're clearly just a vibes-based voter, right? You cocooned yourself in this right-wing echo chamber where you got right-leaning UFC people and right-leaning comedians, and Dana White, his boss, is super right-wing and loves MAGA. He put himself in this echo chamber. COVID helped to break his brain, and then look at that. He goes full MAGA. And you know what? That makes me look like a jackass, because I was the one going in there, taking him at face value, acting kind, holding his hand and walking him through it like he was a toddler on these topics. And then, wow, in retrospect, would you look at that? You completely flipped. I mean, we were defending him, unfortunately, way too late, right? When people were already on to, I don't know, man, you're saying a little bit more right-wing things here. And we would be like, well, no, look, here's a compilation of all the times Joe Rogan said base things. He argued for universal health care. He argued for free college. He argued for higher minimum wage and this good thing. And that, and I would show that compilation and go, see, I don't know what you guys are talking about. But guess what? When you decide I'm going to endorse Donald Trump after he lied to your face relentlessly for the entire podcast, telling brazen lies, then I'm sorry, all the charity is gone, all the sympathy is gone, and I have to come to a different conclusion now. My conclusion of, you could hold these people's hands and walk them through it and talk to them like they're reasonable and work it out, it just didn't work. It just didn't work. And that's why you see a much more bold, aggressive style out of me, where I'm like, fuck these people and the horse they rode in on, because if what I did before didn't work, okay, I got to try a different approach now. So if it's just call these people the fucking frauds they are, well, then guess what? We're going to call them the frauds that they are.
But don't be like hard on yourself in that way. I mean, Bernie Sanders did the same thing where he was trying to go there. And I thought the point Rogan could be reasoned with in that way, and his audience, it was important to try to communicate with them. Like, the thing is like, go on all these platforms. It's like why I went on Tim Pool, but I'm going to go there in a way where I'm not going to try to get invited back. Like, I'm going to go there and try to.
Right. Adversarial.
Right. At this point, specifically with explicitly right-wing outlets, you got to go in there and you've got to eat their lunch, because the only time that leftists get reinvited to these places is if you validate everything that they say. Right. And then that creates a perverse incentive for those leftist communicators as well, because there's so much more money on that side of the equation. It is awash in money, and we're kind of scraping by on our end, because turns out, like, socialized healthcare and those kinds of policies, not necessarily the kind of thing that corporations want to fund in, like, a communications medium.
Yeah, and you have to be adversarial. There's no way around it. I mean, I even criticized Bernie. I understand what Bernie's trying to do when he says, I agree with Trump, cap credit card interest rates to 10%. I agree with Doge. We need to cut Pentagon spending. Like, I understand what he's trying to do, and I don't think he's a fraud or a sellout or anything like that. But the fact of the matter is, and we know this, they're full of shit. He's not going to cap credit card interest rates at 10%. They're not going to cut the Pentagon. Trump increased the Pentagon every time when he was president last time. So a better approach is to upfront and directly say, you're full of fucking shit. You're not going to do that. I know you're not going to do that. Oh, you want to prove me wrong? I would love it if you proved me wrong. I would love it if you did that. But you're not going to do that. So don't give them any false credibility. This idea, maybe they'll do it. They're not going to fucking do it. They're not going to do it. And let's stop playing footsie with them. Let's call them out for what they are. So I would even say to Bernie, don't even bother. Don't even bother. We know what MAGA is. We saw them for the last 4 years. If anything, it's going to be worse this time. And I've become a lot harder on them, not just the people at the top, but also, I mean, again, a lot of the voters. It is a lot of the voters, I have to say. The ones who never abandoned Trump through everything, thick and thin, like whatever number you want to say it is, 30% of the country, thereabouts, whatever. I guess he bottomed out at like 30% after January 6th, like the day after they did a poll. Mm-hmm. He was around 30% support. That number, don't be under any illusions that there's any, with this one weird trick, you can get them to change their mind or flip their vote. Nonsense. These are enemies. Some people are just enemies, and you have to call it like it is. And unfortunately, that's not something that's really being embraced right now. But to be fair, since, you know, we're some of the few who are actually doing it, you really do see a lot of people who are yearning for resistance, who are yearning for the truth, who are now fleeing, like the MSNBC refugees, and looking at outlets like ours. And I do think there's an opportunity here not to flip, oh, maybe the populist right will agree with us. No, wrong. They're not. That's liberals. Over. It's done. Liberals. Forget it. Liberals. Yep. Exactly. It's the liberals who are the ones who slowly but surely are going, you know what? I think they might be right about single payer health care. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense to me. Maybe Obamacare didn't go far enough. Like, those are the ones who you're going to get.
I totally agree with you. And then, of course, like independents or people who are lower propensity voters. But those are the people the Democrats should be targeting anyway, which they didn't last election cycle. But I'm glad we're aligned on tactics. Really appreciate you coming on today, Kyle, and chatting with us. Anything you want to plug in particular?
No, I mean, everybody could find me on YouTube at Secular Talk. You could check out Crystal Kyle and Friends and all that fun stuff. And thank you very much for having me. And I appreciate you showing my beans tweet.
Yes, it's burned into my memory. Thanks so much, Kyle.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye. All right. Well, with that, we are going to wrap up the free part of this program and head into the fun half, where we will take your calls, read your IMs, have some fun. On ESPN, let's do this first before we do. So we mentioned this GoFundMe earlier in the week. Bana, their Instagram account was taken down, apparently.
Twitter,
I'm sorry. Suspended for her portraits of people supporting Palestinians. I mean, I don't understand. So I don't know what the suspension is for, but if you would like to support that GoFundMe, here it is. The link is there you go. The link is below. That's just, we're seeing a lot of that on social media right now.
Yeah. Also a free Brianna Boston. We haven't talked about that, but
we'll talk about it in the fun half. Yeah.
Yeah. The free speech stuff is, it's interesting. Apparently censorship has been conquered. But yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well, Matt, what's happening on Left Reckoning?
Left Reckoning, we had Danny Bessner on and Ashik from the DSA talking about World War and where the DSA is going in 2025. Check that out, patreon.com/Left Reckoning.
And on ESPN yesterday, we gave our picks against the spread. YouTube.com/ESPN show, had some fun there. Folks, if you want a last-minute holiday gift, go to shop.majorityreportradio.com. Limited edition and Majority Report shirts. You can buy those there. And we also have our limited edition 20th anniversary mugs, where you can get that at shop.majorityreportradio.com. All right. We are going to head into the... Oh, no, not yet. Matt has that very cool hat on now. I like that new style, the golf thing with the rope across it.
Yeah, new Left Reckoning hats up at leftreckoning.com/store.
All right. The number is 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now. But I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What?
What is that going on? It's nuts. Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Dude.
What is up, everyone? Fun hack. Nomi Key.
You did it.
Fun hack.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
Fun hack.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is it safe?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
God. I'm going to go throw up.
Libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say.
857-210-35-501. One half. 3-8.
9-11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion. Sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this. Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes, it's satire.
On top of it all, my favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
We are back, folks. It is the fun half. Gonna read some IMs. We're calling into the phone shortly. Computer's frozen. Bradley's doing his best. You got it? Okay. Hugo's Burgers. Joe Rogan is a half. Thank you. All right. Now we are opening up the phone line. 646-257-3920. Gio of York says, it definitely feels like some sort of crackdown. The GoFundMe campaign I was helping with for Gaza was shut down and given only the excuse that the campaign opened the GoFundMe up to liability. Thankfully, it's been reset.
There's going to be a lot of... I mean, look at what's happening with like the racketeering stuff against the Cop City stuff in Atlanta.
Yeah, exactly. Juice for Jesus says, Polymarket funding would have secured a working soundboard for Emma by now. We can't hide from the downsides of independent media. Yeah. Any day now, I'll be getting that soundboard.
Live from the Polymarket studio in L.A.
Sam Cedar, Emma, you've been talking a lot about the overlap between Trump voters and some progressive candidates like AOC. Here's my anecdote. I live in a rural Maryland vacation town with a high concentration of summer homes, estates, and tourists, and very few full-time residents. Earlier this year, we had a town council elections during which my neighbor, who flies a Trump flag, encouraged me to vote for a candidate who was proposing an unoccupied housing tax, a resort tax, and referred to free parking as a subsidy for car owners, among other progressive ideas. He was trounced, by the way. I mean, I would not say that there's like, you know, overlap in a massive sense, but I do think that it's really notable that AOC lost ground in a way that, or did not lose ground in the way that other Democrats did throughout New York State. And she also, her district is majority Latino, which is the demographic that Democrats lost the most ground in. So there's something she's doing right.
People aren't stupid. They know what an insider and an outsider is. And Harris was a massive insider. It's very simple.
Right. And represented the status quo in a way, both like literally by being the VP of Biden and also just in terms of the rhetoric of like, we're just going to tweak some things.
Like all these liberals, I saw Aaron Rupar. Oh. Trump talked about the concepts of a plan and America rewarded him. What was Harris's healthcare plan?
Improve the ACA.
In NPR, in the final month of the election, it was Harris doing outreach for black men because she's worried about them. The top line was crypto.
Oh, yeah.
And then lower in it, you got into specific health issues that disproportionately affect African-American men. How about just healthcare? How about they have health insurance and everybody else does too?
Yeah.
Is that so fucking hard? It is hard if you are controlled by taking $700,000 from United Healthcare alone, not to mention Cigna, Aetna, or any of the other ones. It's corruption.
Yeah.
And people aren't stupid. And there's a lot of people that want to say people are stupid. People aren't stupid.
Calling from an 818 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello. Hold on. Let me take myself off. AirPods.
Thank you.
Yes, you're very welcome.
You know what you're doing.
Owen, this is Owen from Los Angeles, and you know, I just wanted to say that you know, I interpret my political beliefs based off my favorite content creator.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will be moving to the right now.
Oh.
Because they just left the left, but I don't know if it's going to be an extended stay. I'm thinking I might go back to the left. But I'm going to do the right for a little bit, and then I'm going to leave the right and go back to the left.
Mm.
So long as
so like a staycation.
Yeah. So long as the monetary incentives are there for my content creator and the right president is in office. So I just wanted to get that out of the way.
Thank you. Thank you for the transparency.
Yes. I did want to call about Syria because something that I haven't seen talked about by anybody is the Al-Hol, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Al-Hol detention camp. And this is a giant prison on the border of Iraq and Syria that we, through the Pentagon, through our allies, the SDF, the Kurds, are operating. And it holds about 61,000 people. The last Pentagon estimate from 2021, I believe, showed that the majority of the population is women and children under 18. Obviously, not women under 18, but, you know, most of these people are there because they were in some way associated with ISIS insofar as they were brides or, you know, children of ISIS members themselves, or, you know, just there wasn't a lot of due process, let's say, put in place to determine whether these people were ISIS members or affiliated with them. Sorry. And so, you know, a big problem that I just don't see anybody talking about is what's about to happen. Because right now, a lot of our personnel in Syria is basically and Iraq is basically not staffing, but advising the Kurds on like controlling this basically open air, just giant concentration camp. I mean, this thing is huge, you know, 61,000 people is gigantic. And the Pentagon estimate had that 12 people were being born every month in this place. So I could imagine that there's a lot of anger and resentment brewing among these people. And, you know, as the situation in Syria sort of destabilizes, and the Kurds might be, you know, have to divert some of their resources to potentially fight Turkish-backed militias. This is going to escalate into a military problem and a humanitarian problem that I don't think that any part of that region is prepared for. I'm not like,
yes,
maybe not ISIS 2.0, but, you know, this is not a good situation that we've helped foster.
No.
And so, you know, there was a really great piece in the New Yorker a few months ago about it. Kind of
Al Hol is the name of the camp.
A-L-H-O-L.
Dash H-O-L. So, I've seen reporting about this camp and not much recently, but the Western media coverage is mainly focused on the fact that women and children are held in this camp, and it's, you know, sometimes a bit of this Western chauvinism about women's rights and things like that, even though, of course, it, not to take away from how real the reality is for people on the ground. It's just like what the emphasis is. But I think, as you're saying, like, we are getting into a situation where I wouldn't say it's likely, but it's certainly within the realm of possibility that the United States is dragged into a regional war, especially with what we just talked about with Kyle. The idea that Trump is already talking about striking Iran's nuclear facilities,
and
which is what Israel wants.
Israelis are talking about how the collapse of Syria has opened the alley for their jets to go do that. That's a key opportunity they're seeing now. I mean, the main thing to say is, like a lot of the right-wing, center-right parties in Europe and our Center for Immigration Studies here, it is despicable that so many on the political right are using this moment to say, actually, Syrians, time to go home. It's all done now. Get back there. That's disgusting. Bhaskar Sankara in Jacobin had a interview with Anand Gopal about the origin of the Syrian revolution and what comes after the Assad dictatorship. I'll just read one paragraph. Whereas, and this is Gopal's take, whereas HTS is a disciplined and semi-professional cadre of forces, the SNA are mercenaries and thieves. Joe Biden and Donald Trump have signaled that they will not support the Kurds, which means that the autonomous zone will likely be overrun by the SNA. The possibility of Turkish-supported ethnic cleansing of Kurds in cities like Kobani is high. Finally, Israel is taking advantage of the situation to eviscerate Syria's weapons depots and therefore the country's means of defending itself, while also possibly expanding from the Golan Heights to steal more Syrian land, which, of course, we are seeing.
Yeah, it's a very volatile situation. So, you know, whatever, you know, good feelings are being fostered now with, like, the idea that it's a free Syria, I don't think they're going to last. And I think we're going to see
certainly
even bloodier conflict, you know. And I'm not saying that the governmental structures that will be put in place, you know, won't be more liberal or democratic than the Assad regime, but you know, there's just all the factors are there for a massive regional conflict. And, you know, Syria is in such an unstable place that, you know, I imagine the bloodshed will continue. But anyways, thank
and
you
given,
for taking my call.
Yeah, of course. And I just want to add, I mean, the United States smells blood in the water in and of itself right now. So if, say,
they weren't pushing for peace, they're pushing for regime change.
Right.
And like the all the world powers should have. And this is not just putting America, but I think America owes some responsibility there. All of these conflicts should be resolved through politics. And when they're not, you cannot control the insane, Pandora's box that's going to emerge from it. And it's, you know, but there are certain powerful actors that might be able to take advantage of it that it turns out might stand in the way of things like that. So I think it is ugly. And I think the least that we can do is try to not arm and try to bring people to the table and normalize this as politics. I don't know that we have a sort of world leadership that can do that right now.
Calling from a 303 area code, who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Emma, it's the Letter Hack. How's it going?
Hey, the Letter Hack. It's going well. Turns out, of the election experts in 2024, you were right to poach the one who had it down, John from San Antonio, who just smoked me in my attempt at being an amateur pollster.
Well, I will let John do the gloating on that. all I did was bring in a resident expert. That makes me smarter, gives me some credibility, but
yes,
I was by no means the expert. Speaking of experts, that's kind of why I wanted to call in and just give you and your viewers a quick update. Sam mentioned Ronald Reagan was coming on the show. That's actually going to be tonight.
Whoa.
My viewers have been wanting to learn more about, you know, the current state of immigration in the country and the threat of mass deportations and what that means, like, you know, exactly and in detail. So we thought we'd bring on, you know, an immigration lawyer to
very
talk
nice
us through it. So that's tonight. Yeah, it should be cool. We've got a lot of good guests coming on. Do you know Tracy Rosenthal, the author of Abolish Rent?
No. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, this is one you may want to poach from me. I've poached her from Francesca Fiorentini and other shows. This is very good housing rights, renters' rights. It's going to be looking very different now, right? But probably worse under Trump. Evan Ugahart of Assigned Media, he's the founder of Assigned Media. He's coming on. Jesse Dolemore was just on last Monday. So we've got a lot of good guests, but, you know, I mainly just wanted to thank you guys for lining them up for me. And John, like I said, he's coming on again next week. We're going to be talking about the results. So I don't know if you want to feel free to call in if you want.
No,
I'm on the show. If you want to go head to head with the guy,
I can't. It's John from San Antonio Supremacy from now on. I've conceded. So I've bent the knee.
Okay.
But yes, okay. I would love to. I'm going to check that out. Raygun is great. And great. We need some compassionate immigration attorneys more than ever right now. So check that out, guys. The Letter Hack tonight.
Tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern. Thanks, Emma. Have
Thanks
a good
so
weekend,
much,
you
Matt.
Guys.
Yeah, you too.
See ya.
Calling from a 503 area code. Who's this where you're calling from?
Oh, are you connected to Juliet from Portland?
Juliet from Portland. You're a little far away, I think, if you don't mind.
Yeah, let me get my headphones out.
Great.
Hi.
Hey, Juliet. How you doing?
I'm doing so well. And I just want to say, Emma, you are incredible. And I'm so grateful to have a voice like you out there. And who's someone who very candidly and honestly, like, approaches trans issues. I'm a trans woman myself. And a couple of weeks ago, you had a message come in about autogynephilia, which you didn't know much about. And I wanted to explain what it is, because it's actually kind of hilarious.
Go for it.
So autogynephilia is this incredibly transphobic theory about why trans people exist, trans women specifically, because trans men don't exist in these sorts of things.
Of course.
That was thought up by this widely discredited scientist named Ray Blanchard. And so autogynephilia is, it's the theory that trans women transition because they are sexually attracted to the idea of them being perceived as women in sexual roles. He came up with this.
This is very quasi-Freudian.
A very emphasis on the quasi, I think.
Yes.
He came up with this theory by having a lot of sex with trans women and fetishizing them. So you can tell that he's very impartial.
Right.
He said that there was also another type of trans woman, which was the homosexual, transsexual, or HSTS.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, all you need to know about these two categorizations that he came up with in the 80s and 90s is that they are incredibly unscientific, vastly, like, criticized and discredited. They're unfalsifiable because they just do not accept outside views, and they don't account for the lived experiences of the people that they're talking about. So if you ever get a question about autogynephilia or homosexual transsexuals, it's just an anti-trans dog whistle. So there you go.
Yeah, pathology exercise by freaks, basically, is what you're saying.
100%. Very well put. Thank you.
Junk science, says DSA Aaron in Atlanta, which I also think is an apt way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. And I did have something that I wanted to comment on to Kyle Kalinske's point today.
Sure.
Because I thought what he had to say was incredibly insightful about not ceding ideological ground. And I mean, especially in regards to trans people, because we have been extremely marginalized by mainstream society. I mean, obviously. And so I think the work that you do, especially when you have Aaron in the Morning on, who is incredible, is really, really important. And I think that focusing on the attacks on trans rights is crucial right now. And I think that another thing that we can do to support this fight is to, you know, highlight and platform trans people who, in all aspects of society, you know, there was that one asshole who made a really good point that politics is downstream from culture. And there are a lot of people, trans artists and performers, myself included, who are working very, very hard to correct the narrative and do it in a way that is easily digestible and accessible. And if it's okay, before I leave, sure. I would like to plug something.
Go ahead.
Okay. I work for a small independent nonprofit theater in Portland, Oregon, called Fuse Theater Ensemble. We're currently doing our fundraising drive right now, which you can find information out about on our website. It's FuseTheaterEnsemble.com.
Fuse Theater, F-U-S-E?
F-U-S-E, yeah, like fusion.
Great.
And theater is T-H-E-A-T-R-E, like, you know, a stage production would.
Theatra.
Theatra, yeah.
All right.
And and we have spent the last few years regularly staging productions written by and performed by trans people. We have a small collective of us, and we're one of the only theaters in the world to like actually do this, because a lot of people just don't pay us a lot of attention, and they've been really, really successful. Just this last year, we did a show called Blonde on the Bum Trip about Andy Warhol's transsexual superstars, Candy Darling, Holly Woodlawn, and Jackie Curtis, which was incredible because it just shows that, you know, trans people have been around for much longer than we pretend that they have, and really helps dispel a lot of narratives just by existing. And I myself am currently working on a 1-hour comedy special that I'm hoping to film and release within the next year, and funding this theater so that we can, you know, make sure that it gets out there would be a great way to help make that happen.
So. Well, check it out, folks. We'll put the link down below. Thanks so much, Juliet.
Thank you so, so much. Thank you to everyone there at the Majority Report, but especially you, Emma. You are an absolute gem.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
One thing I just wanted to underline on the sort of attacks on trans and abortion rights and things like that is one principle that drives home every time is that it's actually okay for lawyers and professional class sort of gatekeepers, call them, you know, maybe United Healthcare CEOs or something like that, need to stand between the people and the care that they seek, or otherwise people will avail of it in ways that are irresponsible. This is an elitist notion that is anti-democratic, and these are all the exact same story: the United Healthcare CEO getting gunned down, trans care being stopped by professional bodies, and the abortion stuff. It is just trying to set the principle that we need to keep the hordes from being empowered over their healthcare.
On that note, so Brianna Boston is a woman from Lakeland, Florida, and she was just arrested, and she's being punished by the state of Florida as of right now, because she was apparently on a call with her health insurance company. She's 42 years old. She was talking on the phone with
no record, I would say,
a representative from Blue Cross Blue Shield, and then apparently she said on the phone, after her claim was denied for medical care that she needs, she allegedly said to the representative on the phone call, delay, deny, depose, you people are next. Delay, deny, depose was the phrase that was written on the ammunition that was found at the scene of the crime of the killing of, of United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. And so the health insurance company decided, Blue Cross Blue Shield, I guess, decided to report her. So now she's being held Under $100,000 bond in Florida.
Just to let you know, rapists, the bond is typically $75,000.
Here she is, and here's a local news report about this case.
The nature of the threats, we would also be asking for GPS with house arrest conditions to protect the community.
With her head in her hands, Brianna Boston learned she would be held in jail on $100,000 bond. The Polk County judge adding the bond was appropriate given the, quote, status of our country.
It's not like she's a child. She's 42 years old, you know, so we're not dealing with a child here. She should certainly know better.
Lakeland Police Chief Sam Taylor says his department was contacted by the FBI Tuesday. Authorities say in a recorded phone call about a denied insurance claim, Boston told a Blue Cross Blue Shield employee, quote, delay, deny, depose. You people are next, end quote. The language matches the words police say were written on the shell casings found at the United Healthcare CEO's murder scene in New York City.
We will take this very seriously and we will put you in jail if you do something like this. It is not a joke.
According to Boston's affidavit, the mother of three told police she did not own firearms and was not a danger to anyone. But she added, healthcare companies played games and deserved karma because they are evil.
Facts.
Similar to the accused shooter in Manhattan, Boston is getting support online from people who say that she was just sharing her opinion and should be protected by the First Amendment. But police do not see it that way. She's facing a second-degree felony of written threat to kill or injure, conduct a mass shooting or an act of terrorism, a serious charge that could she could end up in prison for 15 years. Reporting live in Lake...
Prison. What? Where are the free speech warriors here?
They're bought. They're bought by, you know, Cantor Fitzgerald Acquisition Corp and different sorts of properties. Carl Bayer pointed out the threat wasn't any more egregious than when casually issued by members of the ruling class on a regular basis. Just last month, for example, incumbent President Donald Trump said of Rep. Liz Cheney, "Let's put her with a rifle standing there with nine barrels shooting at her." Okay, now just ask a question to that cop. That was on there saying this woman's not a child. Is Donald Trump a child? Like, how many times has Donald Trump made actual threats like that? No, he's not going to face $100,000 bail. I mean, he could pay it, obviously. And I would just say the deny, defend, depose thing, saying that to a health insurer, being taken as a threat, that could just be somebody simply saying, hey, you continue doing what you're doing to me. This is physics. And someone else, not necessarily me, might do it. Because guess what? It just fucking happened. And here's the thing. If private health insurance still exists in 10 years, none of us give a fuck how many CEOs get ground up over that 10 years. Because the actual violence being done is by that private health insurance system. And, you know, how longer, how many
ground
people
up,
are going to have
to throw in jail? Physically, right? Like, just, I mean, out churned out of the system.
No, I mean, if, like, there's violence done against them, that will be a lesser concern to me than the fact that private health insurance, it's still a concern. I don't like violence, but it is a lesser concern to me,
yes,
than the concern that this system exists every day and kills tens of thousands of people by not allowing them to have health care. We have a working class that lives a decade less than these rich motherfuckers who get to say anything they want.
Yeah. And the reality is like, how many times have, I don't know, people received death threats, specifically women, I would say.
On Elon Musk's Twitter.
Or rape threats. I know I've gotten a bunch. I know a lot of other female creators have also received that kind of harassment. Are they immediately brought in front of a judge and held on a $100,000 bond like this woman is? Or is the real reason that our police is constructed as it is it there? It's there to protect private property and it's there to protect business interests. And that's as obvious as it gets, just right in front of us right here. And specifically about, like, what constitutes a threat. Talia Levin made this point. There's no specificity about time or place or target. I mean, I guess when she said, you're next, right? But she was on the phone with an anonymous representative, or you people are next. So she didn't even say you're next.
What that was told to her on that call is way more a problem to me than what she said in frustration in response to it.
Right. I think that's right.
Like, and anybody who can't understand that somebody can't say, hey, like, I am very frustrated here. I am confronting a evil system, and I'm not even allowed to say you might have it coming. Maybe that's the free speech America. I mean, how do we look at like China and gloat at all about like freedom of people to express themselves?
And I mean, also I just got to say the threat, there's no immediacy to what she's saying. Like, you have it coming is not a threat.
No.
A threat.
It could be a good warning. Hey, look, I would never do anything like that, which I don't think she would have. I would vote to acquit 100 every single charge placed at this woman. That could just be looked at as, hey, do you understand what you're doing to all of us? What kind of feedback do you need? Do you need, how many elections do Republicans need to beat corrupted by private insurance Democrats? Like, how long do we, how much of these sorts of incidents does the mainstream press need to see where their audience is like, actually, I don't really give so much of a fuck about that. I'm more concerned with the evil system that everyone is being driven insane by. I'm more concerned about that still.
Lakeland PD has had issues in the past. I'm sure you're not surprised to hear that. But this is an injustice. And I mean, I'm sorry, but it's class warfare.
Yes.
That's what that is.
That's what that judge meant. And Ryan Grimm even made the point. Also, this is the same point I'm making, but this mom never said herself was going to attack an insurance executive. She said that if they continue treating people like that, somebody will, which is just her prediction, not a threat. It's similar to what Warren said, and Warren was right, that you can only beat people down for so long. It's not a threat. It's just a fact.
And who was really harmed here by this supposed threat? Who was harmed? Nobody, right? Because a crime, there's supposed to be some sort of harm. The only person that was harmed in this instance is the woman who is now going to lose even more money, right? It already began.
Think of her family.
Right. It already began with her getting a claim denied. And so then she made that case. And now she has to go through a protracted legal fight, which will also immiserate her because the state decided to take the side of a corporation because of some aside that she made. And like, I'm not even going to blame the person working on that phone line. I'm sure there's some sort of corporate directive right now from every health insurer like Blue Cross Blue Shield. But that's why the system is corrupted. And why we need to have a serious conversation about eliminating the industry, about having a single payer system. Even a public option is a prerequisite to entering into the Democratic primary in 2028, is how I view it.
There was one victim on that call, and it was not the motherfucker who was denying her claim. Look, that's just a foot shoulder. Similar to Brian Thompson, actually, because guess what? It doesn't matter that he was no angel, which reporting is coming out and saying he wasn't. He could have been Mahatma Gandhi, and he is still a healthcare CEO driven by profits in an industry that should not exist. But there's one victim on that call, and that was the person who was unnecessarily denied a claim.
Yep. David from Milwaukee. I was in high school when Columbine happened, and over the past 20 years, I have seen almost a monthly basis school shootings happen. I'm not sorry at all about some corporate thug getting his comeuppance. I've never seen any of these rich ghouls cry this hard about any school shooting in the past 20 years, or let alone like the direct results of their actions as healthcare executives.
That's which, not my problem.
Yeah.
Buy more security, all you freaks.
Omega, this show has been singing them notes and giving me such catharsis. My late mother-in-law had to fight like fuck to get dentures from her insurance and Medicaid post-Obama when she lost her teeth after suffering from diabetes and arthritis. After my in-laws suffered from a loss of my wife's father, they financially suffered hard before and after, miss me with the responsibility talk. They don't know our needs. Gerald from New Orleans is either going to be Medicare for all or deny, defend, depose.
True. I'm sorry. There's no way around this. Like, this has to be addressed, confronted, and we have to move on past these companies.
Madman Sam, you hear domestic abuse cases all the time when the woman calls the cops because their partner repeatedly threatens to kill them and the cops say that they can't do nothing.
Of course.
Until they actually try to kill them. Un-effing believable. That's exactly correct. Number 13, time for us all to go to prison too. F this. I will say deny, defend, depose in some context if that's in my future. Timothy Chalamet.
It's going up in graffiti everywhere. Deny, defend, oppose.
It is. Timothy Chalamet looked like Biden should pardon her.
Biden's a fucking crook.
Number 13. Time for us all to go to... I already read that one. Meg MCA. Is it a threat to have my kink is karma playing in the background when I'm on a call? That is the great trash-talking Chapel Roan song that I truly love so much. That's honestly, I will tell you, like, probably two or three Twitter fights have resulted from me listening to that song on my walk home or on my, sometimes I'll take the subway home. Just getting riled up about how I'm going to yell at someone on Twitter.
Will Miniker made a funny point that we should substitute deny, defend, oppose with drivers, dive-ins, and dive, or drivers, dine-ins, and dives, or whatever.
My kink is karma is like a white lady diss track. That's what I refer to that song as. But although I will say I did get very hyped up on occasion, as did Matt, about the Kendrick Not Like Us diss track, one of the greatest of all time.
I was thinking about one specific fight I wanted to have the entire time.
Paul from Syracuse, to your guest's earlier point, the people in my personal life that I am most done with are the three times Trump voters. They seem to be willfully and purposefully misinformed. Yeah. I mean, three-time Trump voter. You're just a conservative. probably too far gone. Hugo's Burgers, don't skip my IM, please. The phone line noise cut you off. Well, I didn't skip it. I just don't know
what the relevance is.
Theo is not alive says, not sure you saw this, but yesterday in Canada, our government unveiled a victims to communism monument that currently has zero names on it because a recent review revealed that over half of them are likely Nazi collaborators. Yaroslav Hunka would be so proud. That is pretty on point.
There is a lot of that that has unfortunately cropped up with regards to the support of Ukraine. And it's something that I can't believe they haven't sorted out yet.
But I'm sorry, it's in our support for Israel too. Like all of these
free, well, of course, yeah.
Well, I mean, like, but the idea that it's still an extension of keeping our Middle East policy is still about keeping Russia and now China out of this sphere of influence. And so anti-communism fear-mongering is a part of it. And it's why you can have the biggest anti-Semites in the world who are also supporters of Israel.
And it's also a nationalism problem because a lot of these guys were just violent, violent nationalists,
right.
70, 80 years ago. And basically both liberals and conservatives are nationalists at this point.
Noah from Tampa, I appreciate referring to it as physics. Human beings have an innate sense of fairness, and any harm met to people will be met with harm to the people inflicting it. That's pretty much all of human history.
There's, as far as I know, no sort of left cadre that says John Brown is a model for political action. But people don't go around saying John Brown should be condemned. They say he was an inevitability in a country that is doing something as evil as slavery.
So let's do 9 here. Here is Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, who is not one of the worst Democrats in the Senate, honestly. This isn't a Joe Manchin or a Sinema. Blumenthal is just a Democrat. Right. But, like, I'm sorry. I was disgusted to see this. And this is, frankly, happening all over the Democratic Party. It's happening in media, where people like Morning Joe or TYT are turning over and on their back to show their belly to the fascists, saying, please rub this. We'd like to work with you, and we'd like some favorable treatment from you. I guess Senator Richard Blumenthal is doing the same thing. So all of these establishment Democrats/centrists are capitulating to Donald Trump before he's even taken power, because that's a little bit easier than standing up to him. Here he is with Marsha Blackburn on Elon Musk and Donald Trump.
Essentially, this bill is about product design, about those algorithms, about the black box AI mechanisms that drive toxic content at kids, about eating disorders, bullying, self-harm. Every parent, literally every parent who has young children these days, or grandchildren, knows how harmful this content can be. And so our bill really should appeal to advocates of free expression in the First Amendment, such as it has to Elon Musk, who's the foremost champion of free speech in the tech industry. But the industry associations continue to lobby against it. Big tech continues to say it wants more profit because it makes more money when kids are on the net for long.
On the net. So anyway, that is Mike Johnson doesn't want that bill passed, but that's an online safety act for kids. It's called COSA, the Kids Online Safety Act. And he just throws in a completely gratuitous compliment to Elon Musk on free speech. You know, Elon Musk, the free speech champion, who worked with Narendra Modi to censor his critics in India, who deplatformed one Ken Klippenstein because he had the gall to do journalism and post the information that he received on J.D. Vance and the documents that the Trump administration had when they were vetting him. He has aggressively gone after his critics. He has pushed his own social media platform to the top of the algorithm. Right-wing content, hateful content, suppressed anybody that doesn't pay him money. The free speech warrior, what is this? Here he is again, saying this on CNN a second time.
This is from Wednesday.
Rolling over. Rub my belly, Elon. Rub it.
That this bill fully supports free expression and the First Amendment. Elon Musk is the champion among big tech executives of First Amendment values and principles. And what we have done in some of our changes is to make clear that there's no effect of censorship, and the opposition from big tech spending millions of dollars on lobbyists and lawyers is simply the result of their desire to continue to profit by driving toxic content at kids. Mm. Your concern as a parent,
yeah.
My concern is mirrored by countless parents across the country.
So Elon Musk is a parent. I mean, just he has worked with China to help censor critics within that country. He has fired Tesla employees who have criticized him. There is a long list.
His own speech on the platform.
Right. There is a long list of what Elon Musk has done to restrict free speech. This is silly. It sounds like pandering. Perhaps you can make the case that Richard Blumenthal is trying to get this bill passed. But I really would argue with the sincerity of that. I think that there are a lot of people who are in power right now, whether it be in media, whether it be in Congress, in the Senate, who are legitimately afraid of Donald Trump, and who also are probably hearing from some of their corporate donors, like, don't make waves. If you want us to support you, Richard Blumenthal, you need to make sure that you have good relationships with the people that have power and that are incoming in this administration, because that could cause some issues for us if Trump chooses to go after you in some way. And that is, I think, a lot of what we're seeing here is it's not just that, like, people are tired of resisting. It's that the folks that don't have principles are looking for an angle to get what they want out of it. So let's normalize Elon Musk. Let's apparently, Richard Blumenthal, let's apparently normalize him for other Democrats. This guy is trying to buy our entire government. This guy's trying.
I mean, Democrats, like, are for sale. That's the thing about Blumenthal. Like these guys are whores. Like they are for sale. And Trump won the popular vote. Like and now AOC is being challenged by Nancy Pelosi, yeah, from a hospital bed, to have some old ghoul put in charge instead of that. Like this is corruption we are facing. Like it's not lack of backbone. We have two giantly corrupt parties, one that we might be able to do something with, but this is corruption. And like with the TikTok ban, is that going through? Like that, why?
It's in the course right now.
I mean, might be in a month that we're forcing TikTok out for reasons that should be widely, I don't know. I just don't buy this reform. I don't know what COSA is, really. I know we've talked about this before. I kind of just glaze over when people like this talk about social media reforms. But we are, again, talk about nationalism. There's nationalists on both sides, and we're just agreeing that TikTok can't exist in this country, not because it's doing anything specifically worse than Meta or any of our domestic companies, but that it's Chinese.
Let's take a call, shall we? We did some good calls, but I feel like I've just kept people on the line for too long. Calling from a 720 area code. Is this where you're calling from?
Is this me?
This is you.
Oh my goodness. I've been trying to call for so long. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
This is Jack. I am, in Nebraska and,
wait, say it again. I'm sorry.
This is Jackson from Nebraska.
Jackson from Nebraska. What's on your mind?
So I grew up in Colorado, and I'm 24 years old. And I don't know about you guys, but when I was in high school, we had lessons about learning about biases in the media and being able to point out, like, fake news and, like, the truth and everything like that. So now that I'm living in Nebraska, I'm in a small town. And what's most disturbing to me is just the fact that facts just don't matter anymore. And yeah, honestly, it's pretty heartbreaking. Like on the debate stage, when Donald Trump said that the migrants are eating dogs and cats, like people around here started repeating that. And when I start to ask them about like the facts behind it, like, they can't provide them. And so that's what's most disturbing to me about the political stage right now in America is the MAGA movement honestly resembles
a cult,
the Nazi party, like, way too much. And
yeah,
honestly, I just kind of, like, I think Sam could honestly provide some good input on this also, but you guys can too, obviously.
No,
but,
I...
But, like, when...
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were done, but go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, like, if we can't talk about facts anymore, then like in the debates this year, there was no talk about policy anymore. Like there was in 2008. And so if there's no talk about facts, then what are we even like talking about anymore? You know what I mean?
Well, I do think that Donald Trump has done immense damage to a lot of people's ability to differentiate between what's true and what's false. I would also argue that our social media platforms are really underregulated, which I think creates a corroded and siloed media environment that exacerbates what you describe. Now, hopefully we can regulate big tech at some point in the future, but as of right now, I agree with you that that's in a dark place. However, I do think that it's a little bit secondary, right? Because if there had been a counter narrative, this would have been stymied to a degree, right? Where politics has always been to a degree about lying. And I think you're absolutely right that the idea that we haven't gotten to a place now in this year, 2024, that's different from 2008 of like misinformation and conspiracism, you would be incorrect to say that we're in the exact same place. Like it has devolved and unwinded. But I think the problem is that in politics, especially when information is moving so fast at this current moment, and will for the rest of our lives, given the internet, you have to have a theme of what you're offering people. It can't just be fact checks and Pinocchios, right? That is kind of just hall monitor stuff. The Democrats failed because they didn't say anything that was true, that felt true as well, as a overarching theme for the party. So perhaps the people in Nebraska that you're hanging out with who you're saying take Trump's word, hook, line, and sinker, they may have been that way with Bush, right? If this was 2006 or 2004. But for everybody else, where that seeps out to, that's on the Democrats still to change their narrative to meet this current moment, if that makes sense to you, Jackson.
Like, my take is the media is definitely worse now than it was in 2008. It was worse in 2008 than it was in 2000. It was worse in 2000 than it was in 1990. There is a long-term trend of disinvestment in reporting by America's capitalists. Then, so the employment in these industries, particularly in local, state, local papers, has been just collapsing. And this is a trend that's been going on for a long time. Conversely, the rise in paid liars, which is, of course, I applied for these jobs, public relations, PR, advertising, that sort of stuff, has gone through the roof. So people are just coming into terms with a lot of messages that are meant to sell them on stuff rather than inform them. I think overall, though, there is an advantage to being the party that generally coheres to the truth, because the truth doesn't really change a whole lot. If all of a sudden we're talking about Michelle Obama wants to force you to eat organic foods, but now all of a sudden it's RFK in there saying, hey, we're going to make you eat organic foods and you like it. I think that can be kind of useful at some point, but I think over the long term, it's not where I'd want to be as a political party. The problem with the Democrats is they spent the last year lying about a lot of things. Like Joe Biden wants peace in the Middle East and isn't supporting a genocide, or, you know, Kamala Harris is fighting for a ceasefire. So you kind of abandon that terrain a little bit. And
And Biden's age, I think, also in terms of what travels, even
a massive lie.
A massive
everyone,
lie.
And you don't need to know anything about politics to understand that a party was hiding and telling you not to believe your lying eyes about something.
The most low propensity voters that I know basically said they're both anecdotal, obviously, but said they're both liars. I know he's a crook, but God, they've been lying about Biden's age the whole time.
What else are they lying about?
Yep.
And one final thing I just want to say before you make your last point is, again, I'd point back to Lainey Newman's book with Theda Skolchpol, Rust Belt Union Blues, which goes into the thing where, we let Democrats like the DLC under Bill Clinton in the 80s say we need to not pay so much attention to labor. And that helps a trend towards labor, just especially in the private sector, not being a thing anymore. And then we wonder why people are getting the wrong messages, because there's not any sort of organized labor to countervail that message. It actually turns out that there's other things that unions do besides just pay their members. It's also have them lead to a more informed populace. So we disorganize people, and then now people are adrift.
Well, and you're not wrong, but I would like to add that, like, I bartend in this small town of 3,000, and these farmers will get off the fields and go to the bar and just watch Fox News, you know. And a couple of years ago, when Fox News lost that lawsuit for, I think it was $1.3 billion, mm-hmm. like, these people don't even know that they lost that lawsuit. And I was so excited at that time that maybe they would finally be held accountable for it, and it just never happened. So I guess, I mean, my last question to y'all is, like, do you guys see any change in the near future? But thank you for taking my call, and left is always best. Thank you.
Left is best. I think you're right about the severity of the problem. And I don't want to discount that either. It's not just the Democrats. This apparatus and this conspiracism has been fostered on the right since before my lifetime, or before I was born. But I do think that Donald Trump, and I think, you know, social media and the paid liars on that, whether you're taking money from Tenet or whatever, or the subsidized guys at the Daily Wire, and all, they have the money for paid advertisements all over Facebook. Like, I'm not on Facebook anymore, but I have occasionally checked it. And you know what? It's a cesspool. And if you're like a boomer, or if you're Gen X and you don't have a ton of media literacy, and frankly, the Gen X people, those are the folks that voted most for Trump. Like, seniors swung towards Kamala Harris, and young men swung towards Trump. But young people still are voting more Democrat, and millennials are the most Democratic generation of them all. But the folks that grew up with Donald Trump on as The Apprentice, who are on Facebook and then who also watch cable news a lot for their news, they're also like the people that are most buying into this Trump bullshit. And I think that they're more susceptible to false information.
I don't know that I see it getting better. Although I do not lament the collapse of MSNBC, and I look to hopefully the future collapse of Fox News. There's difficulties going on within the Murdoch clan right now in terms of secession.
Yes. Can Lachlan do what Rupert has always done?
And, you know, it would be nice if the sort of online media was able to ultimately destroy that thing, because I think the era that we're leaving wasn't necessarily great either, where we had this sort of like centrist media establishment first by major papers and also like a few channels before there was cable news, where everyone vaguely trusted the mainstream press. Like, that's an aberration. Before the Civil War happened, the number one selling book before Uncle Tom's Cabin was a book called The Quaker City, The Monks of Monk Hall by a guy named George Lippard. And the entire plot of that book, you can look it up on Wikipedia, is how all the politicians are doing horrible things after dark behind closed doors and are entirely corrupt. I think that is a more realistic view of America than the one that we've had, where these are just different groups of people fighting for the best ideas. Now, this is a corrupt nation that needs to be redeemed from below.
Did I say Gen X the whole time when I meant Gen Z? I'm getting IMs about this.
You said Gen X.
Which one is older than millennial?
Gen X. Gen Z is below.
I know. I literally can't figure. For some reason, it's like a mental block.
But you meant Gen X, right?
I meant, yes. Yeah. I meant like after the boomers, in between millennials.
I mean, those are the people that voted for Bill Clinton and thought it was really great.
Right. And by the way, to your point about, like, there is actual progress in the media. Like, the CNN and the rise of the 24-hour news cycle manufactured consent for our wars in the Middle East by treating it like a big Rambo movie, showing every night the bombs going off in Iraq the first time in the 90s and in Kuwait or whatever, and making it so that, like, Whitney Houston goes out and sings the national anthem at the Super Bowl and everyone's crying as we bomb Muslims abroad. That wouldn't happen today. So there is a benefit.
And the American people still, like, vote to... They hate Democrats, and they still vote in referenda for progressive things. And we can just say, we can act as if that is just a product of Joe Rogan and misinformation, or we can try to be seen ostentatiously addressing the reasons, the real reasons people do have for not trusting Democrats.
No, I think we do that, right?
Of course. Yeah.
I also think, like, you know, that in terms of, like, what Kyle was talking about earlier, this audience that feels like they were maybe lied to by the media, right? We're telling you that that's the case, and that there's alternative sources like ours, hopefully, but others, where liberalism is dying, leftism is the way to go, and we know this now. And you should, and we knew this before, but if you were dismissive of it, or you thought that, I don't know, that Bernie Sanders couldn't have won or anything like that, we're telling you now that this is the way to actually combat Donald Trump, who you rightly hate, right? And who is going to be extremely destructive and violent and cause a lot of pain. And the way to prevent that is to provide for people so they don't resort to voting for a guy like him. We kind of went down a rabbit hole there, but yeah, it was a good conversation, I think. And thanks for the call, by the way. So what should we do here? Oh, 13. Daniel Penny is making the rounds on right-wing media. He was not found guilty in the killing of Jordan Neely after Daniel Penny choked him for over 5 minutes as his body went limp, and other riders were observing that his body was going limp, and Penny did not let up. But in the vein of Kyle Rittenhouse, the right wants him to be a folk hero now, because as Matt made this great point earlier, there's currently a folk hero that's a little bit more threatening to people. Don't they wish that this trial happened just a few weeks ago?
Only so much folk hero energy to go around.
Because no one really, when you put up this guy, this, now let's just show his face for a second. This dead-eyed glorified Bob's Burgers character. I stole this from somebody because he does look like he's from Bob's Burgers with that long ass face and his perm. That is not the folk hero. The guy that is the person who is resonating with people right now who killed somebody is Luigi Mangione, because he killed allegedly, not proven yet, a healthcare executive who is responsible for the deaths in some measure of tens of thousands of Americans every single year. And people are like resonating with that rage and going, huh, I don't really know if I have sympathy for this guy. And perhaps we're all united in many ways along class lines. And we've all had these experiences with health insurers. The range is kind of from celebrating to what he did to largely being okay with what he did, unless you're a media millionaire or somebody who works for the health insurance industry.
You're invested. Yeah, karma is, I think, often the rough rubric people put this under.
Right. So he's taking up all the oxygen in the folk hero space, and the right wing desperately wishes that it was this guy instead, because their false brand proposition of right wing populism involves this freak summarily executing people that the right finds undesirable or who are too poor to have dignity in their life on the subway. And that's what their version of populism is, because it's for the kinds of people that already are supportive or in the tent of protection from conservative politics. It's people who are already have the upper hand in society. Those are the people that conservatives protect. So here he is on Fox Nation with Jeanine Pirro about why he killed that homeless man.
I mean, I'm not a confrontational person. I don't really extend myself. And I think this type of thing is very uncomfortable. All this attention and limelight is...
Seems like it.
Very uncomfortable.
It should be.
I prefer without it. I didn't want any type of attention or praise. And I still don't.
Mm-hmm. Praise.
The guilt I would have felt if someone did get hurt, if he did... do what he was threatening to do, would never be able to live with myself. And I'll take a million court appearances and people calling me names and people hating me just to keep one of those people from getting hurt or killed.
Hero.
I mean, I'm
hero. What a hero. Wow. You know, someone did get hurt. Someone got killed, actually. Someone died by your hand. But that's, I guess, not a person, huh? J.D. Vance is bringing Daniel Penny to the Army-Navy game this weekend. He's going to be in Trump's suite. Daniel's a good guy, says right-wing populist J.D. Vance. And New York's mob district attorney tried to ruin his life for having a backbone. I'm grateful he accepted my invitation and hope he's able to have fun. Oh, God, the burden. The burden of being a killer. It's just going to be so difficult for him to enjoy this football game with all this attention being heaped on him. And appreciate how much his fellow citizens admire his courage. Citizens, by the way. It's kind of often a right-wing tell when they refer to people usually as citizens. Or as consumers and less as human beings.
I mean, look, if...
taxpayers is another one.
If Penny restrained Neely, which happens all the time. People that don't live in New York, don't have public transportation and just sit in their cars all day getting scared by, like, Steven Crowder or whatever. They post in videos, like, of people having mental breakdowns in the subway saying, what would you do if this was a situation? And the truth is, that happens semi-regularly, but not often. Usually times subway rides are uneventful. if Penny just restrained him and then let him continue breathing, nobody would be talking about
exactly.
This. Nobody would be talking about this because it happens all the fucking time. The mob doesn't say, "Hey, why did you put your hands on that person who is saying it?" The complaint here is that a guy was choked to death. The same thing that happened in Minneapolis. And again, people tried to minimize the actual lethality of these holds, but people aren't stupid. And so, I'm not saying even Penny should have been thrown away for life. I think he is guilty of killing a guy, and that should have been recorded. And, you know, I don't know. There's not a whole lot else to say about it besides the fact that it's being used as a way for people to sort of drive this crime narrative around that isn't about any kind of reality, but is about politics and getting political advantage for reactionary, the reactionary side of things.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. Jordan Nailey was, I don't know, he was severely underweight. Severely underweight. I don't know how much he weighed, but you can see the video of him. I doubt that he would have been much of a threat, especially with Penny having the training that he did. He could have easily just had his hands behind his back, put him on the ground if he really thought he was that kind of threat, wait for the stop, the next stop, call for the cops, move on with your life, if he was really there to protect and serve. But why he's being celebrated is because deep down, this is like a, what do you call a film where you film somebody?
Getting snuff film.
A snuff film. There's a whole class of people. And it's also in the suburbs of these blue cities, Long Island, where he was from, or other parts of New Jersey and New York State, that watch Fox News, watch local news, love to see from their little fiefdoms and their little castles outside of the city. And again, this is not to besmirch people that live in the suburbs, but it is to besmirch people who consume this kind of content.
Your objects are subjected to propaganda, and you need to realize it.
And you're watching Fox News or local news or reading the New York Post, or maybe you're watching some true crime. And in your safe little space where you're at, you can look at the city and imagine how scary it is with all those black and brown people there and all of that filth. That is, I think, why they enjoy that video.
And there is a heinous straw man by somebody like Cenk Uygur, who says that we act as if this is a Shangri-La when we see these things. I think that's the exact word he uses.
Really?
He's a liar. Nobody is saying this sort of thing is good. What we do when we see people like Neely acting out on the subway is say society has failed that person. And we don't just say, like, well, the dad should have been there, because probably that guy's life, I haven't looked into it, probably a little bit harder than most people's listening. And so we look at society as opposed to just say gesture and say, why won't leftists let immigration enforcement be immigration enforcement or cops be cops? Because nobody likes any of this. But what is the actual way to address it? Is it with violence from the top down? Or is it helping people live more dignified lives? And I fucking am so pissed that that Cenk is still doing this. And this is part of his main thing where he's like, the left acts like this is just fine. It's not fine.
Well, it's a
straw man. Nobody's
saying
it's fine. And anybody pointing to New York City as the center for like crime, I'm sorry, look at what's going on in the South. Why isn't that the focus? You know why? Because neo-Confederates want to emphasize crime in cities like mine. And so Cenk gets on a year ago saying, migrants are allowed to punch cops because of the radical left now. Go fuck yourself.
It's just not based in reality. It really is something else. You think very little of your audience, most likely, if you're making these arguments. But we know that crime has been down and has dropped in essentially every way except for shoplifting in the year 2024 from the year prior to that. And shoplifting did go up slightly, but to pre-pandemic levels. Rape reporting is down, although, again, low report rate for that. But say violent assault or murder. Murder, it's quite clear when somebody is murdered. All this stuff is down. And yet you're still seeing crime narratives all over local news. You see the valorization of a guy like Daniel Penny, who, again, could have restrained Jordan Neely by just holding his hands behind his back, but he chose to kill him instead. And you see that the majority of Americans still believe that crime is up. And you know why that is? Is because media outlets are manufacturing consent on this front, because it is titillating for a certain segment of the population.
Despite how triggering that word is to certain people.
It is titillating for a certain segment of the population to be able to, as I mentioned, from their suburban homes, go on their television and consume content that makes them feel like it's so unsafe out there, but it's so safe here. It validates them in a mundane existence. And it's the same reason that true crime is popular. It's the same reason that these videos of Black people fighting one another are popular on social media and pushed to the top of the algorithm. It's the same reason that the New York Post is popular and all the sensationalist pro-cop media. And it gets conflated with the working class. Well, you know, the increased cop presence in New York City subways, you know who most vehemently opposed that? It's the working class of the city that is coming from the outer boroughs and commuting in or working for a wage, that express their opposition. You can look it up. And also are the most frequent riders of the subways. So, like, the folks that are most invested in criminalizing people on the subway are folks that are bridge and tunnelers who consume the content that I just described and want to come in and see a show and go to Times Square and act like it's Disney World and not have to deal with the reality of having pain and income inequality in their face. And you know the number of people that die on the subway every year? It's in the single digits. Or killed on the subway every year. Give me a break. So, I haven't heard with what you're saying, but it's monetizing racial resentment and poverty and resentment from middle to upper class people about poor people.
And how dare you? How dare you when crime does rise and these people are victimized disproportionately? Do you point to anti-police activism as the cause when it is so obviously material pressures that go up during, say, a pandemic or a cost of living crisis? How fucking dare you look at people stealing detergent from wherever the hell, CVS, and say that what this shows is we need more violent suppression or state suppression of people who are poor. And not, why is it that we have people stealing detergent to sell for like a few extra bucks?
Yeah. I think that is exactly right. It's people that blame poor people for their immiseration. And on that note, I just wanted to plug, because it reminded me, as we're just being as fully honest as possible here, I guess this is Christina, right? Do we have her? If people want to go support Cosmopolitics, Christina, this is kind of a pretty good indication of how it appears this network views people that may need some extra help. Christina of Cosmopolitics was critical of the way that TYT has been handling their coverage. And here's an image of how Anna responded, mocking her for asking her for money with help with her bills. You were sure, sweetheart, when you were asking me for money.
Yeah, that's what people do to bosses.
And I guess Christina just needed some help for a month. And that was private. And then it was made public by Anna to mock her. So if you would like to support Christina, she's a Twitch streamer, Cosmopolitics. When she goes live next, we'll raid her stream. But I don't really know how one can make the claim that they're for the working class and then use the fact that somebody asked them for money in a time of need against them publicly.
It's the radical left versus Jenks populist left, which of course he sold a stake to a billionaire for $20 million for it. And also, I didn't know. And sorry if I'm getting a little bit spicy here. I did not know that that studio was paid for off of solicited donations from the audience.
So built for that is now the Polymarket, then sold to Polymarket.
So fundraising from the grassroots for a building, and then taking Polymarket money, regardless of whether Peter Thiel is an investor or not, and slapping that name on the studio. That is crazy, bro. That's crazy. It's crazy to do that.
They should refund that money to the people that donated if they now got a sponsorship from a corporation, which was, it was supposed to be a crowdsourced studio effort, and now it's a crypto betting site that's not even legal in the United States.
And
live from the Polymarket studio in LA.
And Anna's response to that, which is to say, I don't care. Well, the difficulty, Anna, might be that people tuned in because they thought you did care.
Yeah.
And this new thing where you don't care about any of this shit, it might lose you some audience. I don't know. Maybe people want to check out Social Blade for the Young Turks, see what's been going on to their subscription numbers the last couple of days.
And in terms of who's the purest leftist and who's not, I will say that I will put a lot. I will not trying to be in competition with any other of these leftist streamers. I want to work together with them. That's part of why we had Kyle Kalinske on today. Kyle, Crystal Ball, Francesca Fiorentini, still there, but still think she's phenomenal. John Iderola, phenomenal. The Rational National, the Humanist Report.
Nando and Waz, I think,
Matt
are still
Binder.
There.
Sorry, say it again.
Nando and Waz, I think, are still
there. Nando and Waz.
Them.
Yeah, I mean, even Olayemi. Like, all of these creators are allies in this movement and excited for a future where we work with them and don't work with people who are eventually going to leave the left because some crypto betting site gave them money and they need to return some investment to a billionaire who invested in the company.
And we've heard from, you know, we heard from the Letter Hack. We have, you know, Lance from the Serfs, who's obviously unfortunately been in some of these crosshairs as well. But I just wanted to flag too that we've been talking about the subway violence. Go ahead. I'm agreeing.
No. Yeah.
In the context of that, of the subway violence, rhetoric and discussion is, I think I mentioned this tweet, this excerpt from James Baldwin before, talking about the wet eyes of the sentimentalists, basically being how, like, sentimentality can trump what is actually needed for, sentimentality can get in the way of policy, because individual experiences can be so jarring that it makes it so that it can only inform what people think might need to be mapped onto policy, when, in fact, even if someone has a traumatic experience on the subway, even if someone has been thrown in front of a train, that stuff is horrible. But you have to actually, when you're looking at outcomes relative to what people are actually experiencing on a macro scale, that's when the actual difference between facts and feelings actually comes out.
Yes.
In that you can feel scared because you heard about someone getting thrown in front of the subway. I'm not refuting whatever trauma might lead from that or be downstream from that, but you can't make policy for millions of people or say this is the right thing based off a few instances maybe that you can count on your hand every year to then be indicative of what everyone should experience as a result. It's like, that's when literally a feelings-based assumption and ascription overrides what should actually be done for everyone.
To construct a society.
Well, and it's not even about when perception goes up. It's when actual crime does go up. What is our actual solution to it? Is it because we aren't empowering cops so much? Or is there ultimately things that are pushing people towards these outcomes? Or is it purely ideological? We know with COVID, and the cost of living crisis, we know what's causing these actual poor outcomes and horrible events and confrontations. And like, that's what needs to be addressed. It's not say, okay, we just need to loosen the rules on lynching people.
And we've had criticisms of defund as a slogan and that it wasn't constructive enough. Yes, the police need to be defunded to the extent that it needs to shrink. You know, we shouldn't be having these armored vehicles that were left over from Iraq because our tax dollars went to military contracts being used to patrol our cities and our streets. That energy, or that money, I should say, should be redirected towards community policing, towards social services.
Yeah, where, social democracy.
Social services where, it's not to say crime can run rampant, but where there are people who are trained in particular to deal with folks who are having episodes, or folks who may need health care or a doctor or a place to go. That is where those resources should go to, and then creating places for people to go as opposed to just locking them up. So that is where we have criticisms of the defund slogan. But if you want to say the radical left loves people getting punched in the face, I guess that's a bit more convenient for you to straw man. And it's funny, like, you know, we played that clip of Anna saying that she was wrong about Dave Rubin. We don't need to, we can just play your words. If you want to play a clip of me saying that what was accused?
I don't know. Maybe I was wrong about Dave Rubin.
Is there a sound drop of me saying that crime? Well, I don't even, now it's going to become that, but I don't need to mischaracterize anyone's words. Yeah, our words are out there for everybody. So,
yeah, the panders.
Hashtag cold feet jank. Maybe debate Sam, which he offered, or not even debate, have a conversation like Sam offered privately back in July and now just publicly now.
Well, you know, just do the tour of all the right wing.
Let's talk to Glenn Beck. That's where we can have real.
It's so I just have to make one final point. The idea that it's everybody else just can't stop taking shots at TYT is so embarrassingly thin. When Anna's going to Lilo and Stitch and all these other, like, you know, Fridman offshoots. And just packaging like, oh, look at what this guy on our side, Lance from the Serfs, did. Just packaging that up for mileage. Let's see how much mileage we can get with these complete losers and just bash the left. It is gross to me to build a reputation off of years of good work that people, a lot of people respected, to then commodify that label, say, actually, no, we're the progressive. Again, we don't say that shit. We don't actually say we're the left.
No, we're media. We want to platform people who are doing good work for left-wing causes.
Exactly. We want to propagate what the left is doing. We're not originators of it, I don't think. And when you, but if you are taking a meeting with, say, a 900 millionaire or billionaire, it probably says a lot better. Say, hey, we have the biggest left-wing channel on online media. How much money would you want to give us for it?
How much money could that have gone to left-wing organizations or DSA or other groups that wasn't going to what eventually would become the Poly Market Studio? So that's why a media company portraying themselves as the left is incorrect.
Usually,
if you have extra money and changing the couch cushions, it should go to leftist organizing, not a media organization. If you like want to support the left movement, I appreciate the fact that we have members on this program, but I'm never going to say that donating to us is about donating to the left. It's just not the case.
No. And also, Cenk is bluffing about how open he was to a union. The NLRB doesn't typically issue warnings for somebody who is just so overjoyed to, we have great discussions over here.
Yeah. I mean, the people that were, according to them, retaliatorily fired for organizing might have something different to say about that. All right, guys, gonna read some IMs and get out of here.
I don't know. Maybe I was wrong about Dave Rubin.
Maybe I was wrong about Anna.
Mm-hmm. Cole from Little Rock. People abandon the left because they have no actual convictions other than what moves them forward. I abandon the right because my convictions propelled me past liberal to the left out of care for my fellow humans. There is a huge difference. Emma's distant cousin. If Daniel Penny was really remorseful, he would have pled guilty, apologized to Jordan Neely's family, and sought out any sort of restorative justice program where families and victims' families and victimizers meet. As a veteran and son of a disabled Vietnam vet, people can miss me with the attempt to use Penny's military service as some sort of attempt to valorize him, especially when veterans are overrepresented in those who are in the position Jordan Neely was. Exactly right. Veterans are overrepresented in the unhoused population. What's next? The death penalty for criminal mischief, where you punch a hole in the wall of and throw stuff and destroy property? Yeah. I mean, LGBTQ people and veterans are overrepresented in our unhoused population, and that says a lot about like what we choose to prioritize as a society, because we send these people off to war, they come back with trauma, and we don't give them health care that they need. Like Pete Hegseth, who is nominated for defense secretary, was working with a Koch brothers PAC to privatize the VA. More unhoused veterans who are on the fringes of society.
And Hassan was exactly right when he made the point to Cenk that I think Cenk rolled his eyes at, that actually what people are talking about with regards to crime is really homelessness and the cost of living crisis. That's absolutely it. Like that's the real problem absolutely. In this country right now is all the property owners charging rents have people absolutely over a barrel. Absolutely over a barrel. I'm shocked that crime isn't, frankly, far worse than it is right now.
Vinny from Buffalo, JD Vance celebrating this guy is so terrifying. I can't help to think that there will be copycats. Dave from Jamaica, Emma and Matt, I feel you on the crime hysteria. I'm very tired of folks coddling cowards from the right wing or from the unaligned.
And again, I think America is too violent and, has too much crime in a lot of places. But again, if people aren't looking at, say, Missouri and they're only looking towards blue cities, it is a fascist propaganda product.
Johnny Blaze, holy shit, freedom of speech really does mean freedom to be white supremacist and racist now. It just really hit me, like, it's like a good and evil are subjective and we can't even rally about Nazi shit anymore. Fuck. Yeah.
Censorship is entirely a vehicle for right-wingers to pretend they're against.
Hopeful Masochist says, I saw a clip of Zac Efron on his travel show meeting an 80-year-old World War II vet in Italy, and he was like, wow, so brave. Like, oh no, Zac, oh honey. Well, he's not paid to be a historian. He's paid to be beautiful. So.
Who's Zac Braff?
Zac Efron.
Oh, sorry.
I mean.
I forgot there's other Zac.
I don't think that there was one. I think like for my maybe like 2 to 3 year just like cohort, Zac Efron as on in High School Musical was like the heartthrob, and he's adorable in it. He really is. He doesn't sing in the first one, but he does sing in the other two. I know way too much about High School Musical. I should not. I was not allowed to have Disney Channel until High School Musical came out, and that's when I first was exposed to it. Labor Lover 420, we need wanted posters of all who are protecting these insurance companies, including that fat fucking cop. Paul from Syracuse, to your guest point earlier, the people in my personal life that I am most done with are three times. Oh, I read that already. Morpheus, you never hear about autophallophilia because conservatives are uniquely terrified of trans women, specifically of being attracted to them. Glad the caller brought up the auto-gyno nonsense. It's completely discredited.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's how we reacted when the first time it was brought up.
Sorry, these IMs are sometimes coming in so quickly I lose my spot. MJS, Majority Report gets a lot of respect in the wild. People seem to equate you guys with authenticity, and it's true. Sam and company might be reluctant, but they're leaders none of the left.
It's probably because we're the real left, and we're the most authentic.
We're the only left! You're not pure enough for us.
I like the populist left.
It's so funny, because I don't understand if we're the real left, like, but I'm also a fangirl for Kamala, which, like, yeah, I got enthusiastic about voting for Kamala as the first female president against Donald Trump. Sue me.
But again,
I don't understand. But she's also a corrupt cop, right? Like, which one is it? Am I too left? Are we too left? Or are we too pro-Kamala, like an establishment? Which one is it?
It's almost like they can't actually follow any of these principles to anything real. I mean, Cenk, when he endorsed that billionaire against Karen Bass, it was the same sort of thing. Like, I'm sick of all the corporatist Democrats endorse a billionaire.
Now time for a billionaire Republican until basically, what, like a few years before he ran?
Yeah, did he retract that now? Interesting, because it's the same dumb bullshit, actually.
All right, five more, and then we'll get out of here. Dizzle McFizzle said, I believe it's called Poverty Safari, where suburbanites do when they consume YouTube videos of homeless encampments. Yeah.
Absolutely. And again, what I said about crime, the crime stories actually being housing stories, where were those Colorado stories with the Venezuelan gang set?
Aurora.
Well, I mean, like, specifically what kind of housing?
Oh.
Slums.
Basically slums, yes. Mostly low-income people working there who were complaining about conditions. And then the corporate landlord hired a lawyer that sent out a bunch of press releases to the media about how it was because of a gang takeover, and the press reported it, as they sometimes do, which they also did with, like, Target saying, oh, we had to close this store in X location because of shoplifting. And these corporations, because as Matt was saying, there are paid liars, public relations people who pitch stories to the press, they know that in 6 months, when the FBI crime data comes out, that it doesn't matter because they're putting out a PR press release for their shareholders to not abandon them because they made a poor business decision to put this Target or this Duane Reade or whatever, or the CVS in the wrong location. So they blame shoplifting. You find out there's no evidence, but you've already reported it. Same thing with the corporate landlord and the law firm that was hired there, right? You gobbled up a mainstream media story that was fed to them by a PR firm or by a law firm and reported it as fact and then say, oh, we're better than the corporate media. You are doing corporate propaganda. Charlie,
joining in on, like, the immigration thing, because, like, there was the Jose piece on that. There was gang stuff before. When all of a sudden it becomes more of a news story because the gangs are from a certain part of the world, that's racism.
Yeah. Angela from Alberta, the criminalization of homelessness and unhoused people is scary. Doug Ford, the Ontario premier, just announced a bunch of laws that will put many in jail instead of finding solutions. Yeah, and it feels like a foregone conclusion that the Conservatives are going to win and beat Trudeau next election, so that's not good news. All right, three more and then we'll get out of here. National Security Advisor Captain Crunch said, listening to Matt Leck eviscerate TYT is my kink. And my kink is karma. Wow. Milo the Dang Bila said, Emma, I'm also a 94 baby and I didn't watch that High School Musical until 2014. Honestly, it goes hard. I also love the Corbin Blue song, Push It to the Limit. Okay, but that is not in High School Musical. That was in, what was the jump rope movie, Jump In. Thank you, Bradley. And the final I am of the day. Week. I'm going to find a good one.
You know, try to encourage people to post and try to help them if I can.
And the final I am of the day. Week. God damn it. I can't find a good one that I haven't read yet. Here we go. DSA Josh, my dad is a retired working class Trump voter and he supports both Luigi Mangione and the acquittal of Daniel Penny, although he agrees that Jordan Neely's death was an unfortunate tragedy. What would you say to people like my dad? Well, I would say that he's further along than liberals who do the celebration of Daniel Penny, but not of Luigi Mangione. What do I say? Well, I would say just like, Dad, think about the power dynamics at play here. Like, it's okay for people on the subway to be afraid, but
it's okay to even restrain somebody you think might be hurting someone. Although, like, if you do it preemptively, like, I think maybe there should be an assault charge care for that too. You shouldn't go to jail forever, but like, if you, instead of just restraining someone for a little bit, choke them to death for 5 minutes.
That's right.
Like, I'm sorry, it's clear what's going on here.
And DSA Josh, I'd say to him, how many, you know, do you think that, how many people do you think that that healthcare CEO harmed versus Jordan Neely? That would be the, my opening question. And then that emphasis that Matt said, why couldn't he just be restrained? He's somebody that's really struggling. He has no money. This guy has all the power in the world. That's where we should be directing our anger. So with that said, guys, we're going to wrap up this week. Sam will be back next week. Really appreciate you guys all this week. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will see you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somewhere I lost my drive.